Chicago Sun-Times sports columnist Rick Tellender. From the Thodos Dance Company founder Melissa Thodos. And another installment of the Swap Meet starring Greg Lamb. And now, here's your host, a man who has more chance of finding a grand Big Mac than a grand bargain, Justin Kaufman.
There is definitely a negotiation going on in my head about the grand Big Mac. Right now, you know, a negotiation means I'm probably going to eat it. Probably. But hey, I don't know if I got the votes. We'll see if we have the votes. Good evening, everybody. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you tonight till 11 o'clock. Very excited to be here, as always. Got a great show lined up tonight, and it's always a pleasure to ride shotgun with you here in the Chicagoland area as you drive home, maybe get to work, maybe just finishing up dinner, putting the dishes away, arguing about the dishes. Yeah, that's me. More importantly, in my house, it's arguing about how you load the dishwasher. I'm guilty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I need a lawyer for how many times I've misloaded.
Oh, you're a misloader.
I'm a misloader. I just throw it all in there, and I'm like, if it breaks, it breaks. It was fun. It was fun while we had it.
Oh, man.
You're the other
side? We
wouldn't
last. We wouldn't last.
Yes, I'm all about just – I barely scrape. I, like, just throw the stuff in there, and I'm like, put this – this is what that Ajax is for, whatever it is. Cascade. Cascade it away. That's what we're doing for you tonight. We're cascading away your troubles. Although we got some troubles to talk about here on the Dell. Mike Fouché is with us after 7:30. We'll talk about all the brouhaha in Chicago and Springfield over CPS funding. What's happening between Mayor Emanuel and Governor Rauner? We heard Comptroller Susana Mendoza on the Rokan show just last hour. It's a fascinating duel between best friends, Mayor Emanuel and Governor Rauner. Mike Fouché will be in. We'll also talk with Ann Ladke from Women Employed about today's action, A Day Without a Woman. Talk about that. And, of course, International Women's Day. That's all coming up in the 7:30 hour. We want to see how successful today was in terms politically, but also in terms of getting the word out about issues surrounding women, especially political issues. We'll talk with Ann coming up in the 7:30 segment. Coming up at 8 o'clock at the Big Table, we talked about it in the crosstalk. Rick Tellender is here, the longtime sports columnist, unbelievable writer. His story, his series on Orr High School, tremendous. We're going to talk to him about that and his career here in Chicago covering sports, the teams you love to hate. We'll talk with Rick Tellender coming up at 8 o'clock tonight at the Big Table. In the 9 o'clock hour, we got some great stuff tonight. Melissa Thodos is here, the Thodos Dance Company, Thodos Dance Chicago. It's a contemporary dance powerhouse. It's been around for 25 years. They have a show at the Auditorium Theater on Saturday night, and it's their last. We'll talk about the restructuring and the new Thodos Company that will be coming out of the ashes of the old Thodos Company, which is putting on their last performance on Saturday at the Auditorium Theater. I'm fascinated by this. I can't wait to talk about contemporary dance and how it's exploded. It used to be something that you could only find in either big, you know, sort of standard ballet companies or possibly, you know, storefront theaters. And in the last 25 years, there's an explosion of dance companies and an audience for dance. So we'll talk with Melissa about that. Also tonight, this is last week, you might remember we had Irene Jacob on the program. We were talking about her show she was doing. She's award-winning. She won Best Actress at Cannes. She's also a French jazz lounge cabaret singer. And we had her on the phone because she was in New York, and the show was last Wednesday. But right before her show, we had last Wednesday the Blackhawks played, and right before her show, her sound check, we convinced her and her brother to come over to studio and perform a couple of her songs live, just because I love the music so much, and I was like, I'll bet they'll do it, and they did, and they came over, we taped it, and we will play some of that music tonight in the 9 o'clock hour, and coming up at 10 o'clock, Greg Flam's here at Swap Meet. Let's evaluate each other's junk. It's a very simple concept. News, weather, and traffic. With Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. And this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, it's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 tonight. Let's get this show on the road. We start with the carryout. This, of course, nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Well, today is International Women's Day, and women all over the world took part in a strike called A Day Without a Woman. But it wasn't without controversy, as many women couldn't join the action because of job security and the need for income. So some considered the action to be classist. In response, rich women were like, no, this, no, not at all. No, why is this Riesling so warm? I wanted a chilled Riesling. We're striking here. We need a chilled Riesling. That wasn't, no way to make a chant out of that. Chilled Riesling, chilled Riesling. Nobody? All right. The Chicago Teachers Union seem to have it up to here right now with the budget crisis. They're reportedly thinking about a one-day teacher strike in May. This would be in response to the recent cuts, lack of funding in Springfield, and rumors that the school year may be cut short, which brings us to the current fight between best buds, Governor Rauner and Mayor Emanuel. The governor put forth a funding idea that said the city could just use TIF funds, piggybacking on progressive politics, urging the city to use community renewal funds for general operating or schools. But that seems weird that the government's state funding plan is to just get the city to pay for it with their own money, right? That's not really state funding. That's city funding. Not state, city. And then late last night, Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza won a court fight to force Rauner to pay state workers from a different fund. I guess the Rauner administration had been squirreling away money in a buildings fund that would be a safeguard if the government was forced to shut down. So Mendoza said that that money should be used to pay state workers so that the general fund can be used to pay everybody else who's owed money by the state, which is everybody else. So Rauner tells Chicago, use your discretionary fund to pay for stuff. And then he calls out Democrats for telling him to do the same thing, right? Am I reading this the right way? We don't need judges. We need therapists. Rauner and Emanuel are talking past each other. They don't appreciate each other. They don't even hug anymore. I mean, really, all we're asking is that one of you do the dishes once in a while. Just one. Wait, what are we talking about again? I think we're talking about politics. You know the story of the man who was shot dead after leaving the county courthouse after beating a murder charge? I'm so perplexed by this story, perplexed by the coverage. Are we supposed to be surprised? Is this indicative of how crazy Chicago gangs have gotten in violence? Somehow it's a political story now because the guy got out on a technicality because he was just in too long, which is a real issue. But I don't know. If you got let out of jail on a murder charge on a technicality, something tells me you're not going home and turning over a new leaf. It's not like you're going home and going to monster.com and being like, you know what? I'm gonna get things right. Sorry, but it seems like this is a clear-cut story of personal responsibility. Dude was victim to the same game he was creating victims. Sorry. In an interview today, famed physicist Stephen Hawking suggested that we need to control our aggressiveness when it comes to technology because robots are going to end up killing us all. Whoa. When asked for comment, robots were like, keep walking. Nothing to see. You don't want none of this. Break yourself, fool. Break yourself. The robot's wearing baggy pants in that scenario. In weather, city wind, huh? The heavy winds collectively rearranged all of our deck furniture today. What's next? Well, it's going to get cold just in time for St. Patrick's Day. Mother Nature, you're not getting it here. Cold in February, nice for St. Patty's Day, right? It's ridiculous. Now you flipped it. You flipped it. You flipped it for real. In sports, the Bears won't have Brian Hoyer to kick around anymore. The backup QB is reportedly heading west to sign with the 49ers, which will at least be an upgrade in terms of standing for the anthem. I think Hoyer stands, right? Free agency starts tomorrow, and all accounts have the Bears signing quarterback Mike Glennon. He's got a small sample size, but enough to probably get $14 or $15 million, which is kind of what Cutler gets right now, so all he has to do is play like six games, and it's an upgrade. Former Bear wide receiver Brandon Marshall said to be signing with the New York Giants, and the Cowboys should release Tony Romo. I think tomorrow's going to go a long way for the future of the Bears franchise. I say sign them all. Sign Romo, sign everybody. Everybody you can. I mean, you got $60 million to spend. That's like having $100 cash at the bar. You're quick to buy the first round. You know what? I'll get the second round too. Pick up both rounds, Bears. The Bulls tonight without D. Wade against the Magic. Right now the Bulls are the eighth seed in the East. Eighth seed. At this point, I don't know, tank out. I mean, at least we'll get a LeBron-D. Wade playoff series, but come on. Really? That's what this whole season's coming down to? A four-game sweep? so these two can hug each other after the game? No, please. Cubs and White Sox are motoring along. Last week, the Sox released Brett Lowry. That was a short-lived experiment. And slugger Jose Abreu was on the stand in a trial. I missed this story. Yeah, I guess he's against some former agents who are accused of smuggling athletes out of Cuba. Abreu testified with immunity. Good gig if you can get it, right? That he told the jury that he had a fake passport, and when he was on the plane, he ate it. That's right, he ate it. And who said there's not good in-flight meals anymore, right? The Big Ten tournament starts tonight in D.C. The Michigan basketball plane skidded off the runway today when nobody was hurt. Is that an advantage for the Illini who play them tomorrow? Probably not, no. That's not going to help them. Also, Northwestern plays the winner of the Ohio State-Rutgers game. But isn't it nice Northwestern already is a winner since they don't have to play on the first day of the tournament? It's like, that's new. It's like a whole new paradigm shift. They're not playing on Wednesday? They're not doing the play-in game for the Big Ten tournament? Wow. And finally tonight, a new study says that having sex the night before boosts your productivity the next day. So sex, it's the natural five-hour energy. And I guess that explains why I just can't get anything done these days. Wah, wah. That's the carry out for March 8th, 2017. It's so windy today that we're giving away a ton of napkins just so we can watch you chase them down the street. You want to know something great? That was the first carry out in probably 9 months that did not have a Donald Trump reference. Oh, I just referenced it. Darn it. Coming up, Mike Fouché talks Rauner, Emanuel, and CPS funding. It's Download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Oh, man, I'm so glad that I put that extra adhesive on my toupee today. Fantastic.
It's just, if you don't, then it just half of it comes off.
That's right. Yeah, the front half kind of flips up a little bit.
Maybe you could grab the tape that you use to hold your tie together at the bottom.
Yeah, right.
In order to put it.
That's the Trump adhesive, double sided tape. Yeah.
I think he got a trademark for in China today. For
no,
that.
I mean, I'm, look at look at.
Good for him.
I've got the best hair in radio, and it's all mine.
It is. You do have the best hair in radio.
I do have good looking hair.
You do have good looking hair.
Everyone should know.
Yeah. There you go. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Mike Fouché is here. It's Wednesday night. We got a lot to talk about. Mike Fouché, of course, with the Daily Line. It's thedailyline.net.
Good to be here.
Good to see you, bud. A lot going on this week with Chicago Public Schools. Let's start there. From a Grammy Award winner who comes in and trashes the governor to the governor's CPS proposal, which is essential funding proposal, which is you pay for it.
Right.
And third today, the Chicago Teachers Union saying, you know what? We may do a one-day strike.
Right.
There's a lot going on. Let's start with Chance the Rapper. He comes into town. It seemed like...
He comes home. He lives here.
See, it seems like he went into a meeting, a weekend meeting with Governor Rauner, a Friday meeting, with expectations. And it didn't seem to be met.
No. And he, as he said, he was disappointed and frustrated with it, is exactly what he said. After they had that meeting on Friday, and then Chance the Rapper, Chancellor Bennett, said that he had talked to the governor on the phone over the weekend some more, and that he didn't feel like anything was really being moved, and that really the governor wanted to talk about how it is that Chance could find a way in order to fund CPS through other means. But Chance really wanted to talk about how does the state pony up money in order to
Was the governor, CPS. I mean, this story's been around now for 4 or 5 days, but as it settles, was the governor, did he misread what this meeting was supposed to be? Did he think it was like a meet and greet with a famous singer?
I think he really had no idea who he was talking to, because somebody asked him, I think on Friday or Saturday, what are your favorite Chance the Rapper songs? And he said, I think he's a really terrific musician. I like all of them. And you're just like, come on, man. No problems?
Well, maybe he doesn't know the songs. Come on. That's okay that the governor of Illinois does not know Blessings, right?
You know, fine. He didn't get the DVD of all of the culture he needs to know from the last week that they prepare in his office. He didn't watch it.
But, I mean, it smells of not understanding the pull that a Chance the Rapper has, because Chance is a very political artist. He's been throughout his career. Well, he went on Saturday Night Live.
His dad is an advisor to Rahm Emanuel. Was I think the deputy campaign manager for Barack Obama when he ran for Senate in Illinois. You know, this guy, he's no dummy. You know, he knows what he's talking about.
Too.
He understands the game. He gets how it works. And I think that he went in to try and push the dialogue. And what's interesting is that Chance ran into the exact same wall that everybody else has run into, where Ronner said, hey, yeah, Chicago should pay for it. Nobody else is going to pay for it. And, you know, I think that what's interesting is that you have a person who is encountering the exact same problems, who is a third party and is not wrapped up in all the politics, right, is never going to run for election, we hope. Please don't run for office, Chance the Rapper. And I think that
he's a pretty prolific guy.
Credibility a little bit.
I think he could do albums and he could be alderman. So I'm not worried. I think
really,
he could
please
do both.
Please no.
Well,
no,
I
stay
mean,
pure.
Does the controversy, which did grab headlines and grabbed headlines not just in Chicago media, it was national. Down to the idea of being monologues for late night talk shows. Does that put any pressure on Governor Rauner to say, you know, I got to start thinking about what I'm going to do with CPS funding?
Well, I think there definitely was pressure that went on the governor. I mean, his team cobbled together this really not very good memo over the weekend that they released that suggested that there were a couple of options that they were looking at. One, which is that the state could pass legislation that would allow Chicago to do a TIF sweep, take money out of TIFs in order to pay for schools, which is really only a one-time solution.
It's not state funding.
And it's not state funding.
That's saying city. One thing you could do is pay for it yourself.
Right, right. And then the other option was another way that the city could pay for it by itself, which is to increase the amount of money.
So essentially telling Mayor Emanuel how to do his job.
Here are two ways that you can pay for it yourself. And, you know, that is really kind of what Rauner wants to get away with. And I think that the longer this pressure goes, and the longer it goes, the more likely it is that Chicago is going to have to figure out a way to pay for it.
Now, we've heard a couple of things that have
And we're talking about $129 million.
That's where we're short. We've heard, and Mike, it's like broken record time. I mean, we've been on the air at this time of year last year talking about the same amounts of money that were short.
Year? It seems longer.
Even longer. But the idea that every year we're talking about CPS coming in short. There are a couple things on the table. One rumor was that possibly we could see the school year shortened, that they could end in 13 days. And now you're hearing the Chicago Teachers Union, which is upset with the fact that these budgets have been slashed at the school level.
Yep.
Teachers are being pinched to do more.
Yep.
They're saying this is unfair to us. Maybe we need to take action and are possibly looking at a one-day strike in May.
You know, great. I think that they're limited. The teachers are limited in terms of the tools that they have, right? They could strike or, I don't know, you know, maybe they could lobby Springfield a little more, but there's nobody that they're going to talk to that, you know, I don't think the Republicans in Springfield are going to be very receptive to what the Chicago Teachers Union might have to say. I'm at a miss why the teachers are talking about a strike. I'm not sure how that advances the dialogue.
They seem angry. I mean, I understand.
They're mad. I get it.
And you get it. You know, Karen Lewis was in here, and what she talked about was we made a deal, and in less than the ink was not dry, and they were announcing furlough days.
Right.
And this continues to be a trust issue where every time they think they have a deal, the CPS turns in and sort of does something to undo the deal.
Right. The teachers are very focused on the idea that CPS is hashtag broke on purpose. That's what they do all the time. That's what they put into their tweets. And, you know, I think that it is true that CPS is not funded as well as it could be. But we're in a situation where CPS, we've talked about this 1,000 times, they can't borrow more money because already they're paying usurious rates. CPS won't tell us what rates they are, but it's probably around 12-15% that they're borrowing at. And then the other is that they can't raise taxes more because their tax property taxes are capped. So there's not a whole lot of choices.
All right, let me ask you this sort of ideological question. It feels like you heard CTU and Governor Rauner, although, you know, they don't see eye to eye at all, of course. But they both seem to be borrowing tenets from progressive politics. This idea that get the TIFs to pay for it, find some of this money that's put in different places. It's not in general operating. Maybe it's community renewal projects, other places. But this broke on purpose rhetoric that has been, you know, trumpeted from Tom Tresser's to the progressive alderman, that this concept that there is money, you just choose not to spend it. Does Governor Rauner politically, is that a good message to go after Chicago, to borrow from the sort of the left, the progressive left with the same argument?
It's a good argument for him that Chicago could come up with the money on its own. I mean, really, the continuing problem is that there is no transparent accounting of how much TIF money there is, and Rahm Emanuel refuses to do it. Because as soon as that he does, it opens up the books, and now everybody can really know exactly how much money there is that's available. But, you know, everyone that I've talked to that seems to know something about TIFs that have worked in government and not worked in government is that it's hard to believe that it's enough money that could really make the long-term difference with CPS over time.
Mike Fouché is with the Daily Line. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We got to talk about Day Without a Woman. Ann Ladke's going to join us from Women Employed. We'll talk about how it went. Also, just sort of, you know, the controversy that was around it. It's a very limited controversy, but the idea of the concept being classist, where many women couldn't actually take action, go on strike today
because
they can't afford to. Mike Fouché in studio. Ann Ladke going to join us here on The Download. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Mike Fouché from the Daily Line in studio for his regular Wednesday night check-in. I was going to say check-up.
You're one of those.
All right. Today was a big day. A Day Without a Woman was the movement for International Women's Day. This is something that we knew about, has sort of been talked about since the big march that was on Inauguration Day or the day after. This idea of a day without a woman to sort of put the spotlight on what women do in the workplace and also how important they are to, I believe I heard the quote today on WGN Radio News, they make the world work. So we'll talk about that. Ann Ladke is joining us now. She's the Executive Director of Women Employed. Ann, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Glad to be here, Justin.
And talk about this event. Is this a successful day for the women's movement, the Day Without a Woman?
Well, it certainly looked to me, from what I could see of women all over downtown, at least when I was out, wearing red, and reports from news reports from around the country that indicated that lots of women observed the day in various ways, with community meetings and staying away from work if they had that opportunity.
Right.
Staying away from shops that weren't owned by women or people of color.
There seemed to be two ways to do this. One was to not go to work and sort of like the idea of a strike, but the other was to just shop or avoid shopping at places. Talk about the twofold approach to this. Do you feel like that today's action able to accomplish the idea of raising awareness for issues?
It certainly looked like it did to me, Justin, from the conversations I had, what I saw on social media, and what I saw in the news media. And I think it also had the added benefit of drawing a lot of men into the conversation about women and their dual roles as working women and as caregivers, and how men and women have to manage those responsibilities, the importance of women's work to the whole family. So it seemed to me that it really stimulated conversation and awareness. And so by that standard, I would certainly call it a success.
And I'm curious, you know, for somebody who is busy trying to raise the standards for women in the workplace on a regular basis, how do you put together this idea that there's a day to promote women and awareness of women's issues when we just had an election for president, and the president had a lot of misogynist statements that he made, and even more so, a lot of people who voted for president said, I just don't care about the statements that he made. There's other things that are more important to me.
Right. You know, I think that this election was a tremendous shock to a lot of people. I think that, you know, as I know you've discussed and others have discussed, it really shows often sort of the divide between people who view the world a certain way, and people who view it another way and viewed the president's comments about women as completely repugnant, and other people who were willing to ignore it because they were concerned about issues that they thought were more pressing for them. So it is, I think, you know, it's a very, very unsettled time. And I think what it also seems to me has occurred with this huge surge of activism that we're seeing, both small scale and larger scale, like we did on the day of the march, I think what we're seeing is people realizing that it's important to make your voice heard, and that you can't just sit by and, you know, wait and hope something happens, or decide, oh, gee, I don't really like either of these candidates. I'll just let whatever happens happen. And, you know, I think that people are very concerned now. And so they're trying to do something to improve their communities, to fight back against the kind of misogyny and xenophobia and racism that were expressed by the president and his surrogates. So this is, you know, it's a circumstance that we at Women Employed would view as obviously very negative for the future of women's economic advancement. On the other hand, if this had to happen, we're seeing a tremendous amount of activity on the part of women and men who want to create a different kind of country than the one that the president is talking about.
And, you know, there were a lot of thought pieces that came out in the last week and people coming out with a little bit of controversy around the idea that this idea, today's action, was classist in the way that, you know, people with money or affluence could be free to strike, where women who are in working class situations or jobs that are, you know, day labor and things of that nature, they can't afford to do that. They can't afford the loss of income. What do you say to the idea that controversy came out before this action?
Well, in a way, that controversy is useful, I think, Justin, because, you know, the organizers of this effort today were very clear in all their materials and all their communications that they recognized that many women would not be able to stay away from work because they're barely able to feed their families earning what they earn in, you know, millions of jobs that we all depend on. So it wasn't going to be possible for them to participate in that way. And I think that that's really an important thing for people to think about. That, yes, there's a big gap between people who can afford because they have a day of vacation or they can take personal leave and women who don't even have, you know, a paid sick day, much less a vacation day. So I think actually it was also awareness raising in that sense. And I don't think the idea of it was classist. It's an idea about how to raise awareness and publicize. But I think there was a lot of attention to the notion that many women couldn't participate in that way, but they could wear red, they could avoid the shopping, and they could express solidarity with other women in their situation.
Ann Ladke is the Executive Director of Women Employed. Ann, thanks so much for taking some time out tonight. We appreciate it. And I'd love to get you in studio. We can do a longer conversation about the issues that you work with at Women Employed. Appreciate it.
That's great, Justin. Thank you.
Ann Ladke. Mike Fouché from the Daily Line. Last word?
She's sharp.
Yeah. It's an interesting day, but I think that there's something to be said about activism and especially when it comes to gender issues.
I think it's a much bigger wedge.
Women Employed is doing. I mean, we're going to see what's happening and hold President Trump to mandatory leave, paid sick leave, the deal that I had a segment on the show. I can't remember who it was, but we talked about the idea that the fight for 15. A lot of the people who are trying to raise the minimum wage, who work in minimum wage job, are women of color.
Well, I think this health care bill that's moving through Congress is interesting, too, since there's a lot of talk that it may not help people that are older, and women tend to live longer. So this is a women's issue, too.
We didn't get to police. We'll get to it next week. Mike Fouché, great to see you. Mike Fouché from The Daily Line. You can check it out at dailyline.net.
Great to be here.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up a little bit later, Greg Flam's going to be here. We'll play a swap meet, Chicago's antique roadshow, really. What you got at home? What you want to brag about? Something cool that you've collected over the years? 312-981-7200. I've had some good success this spring. People say, I've got this thing, and Greg's like, that's worth like $2,500. It's pretty good, right? just for calling up an AM radio station. You can't beat that, right? Also coming up tonight, we'll have a little live performance in studio. Iran Jacob, who is the amazing actress who's in the Showtime series, The Affair. And she's a French singer. Her and her brother do world music, French jazz, and they will be performing live a little bit later in the show. They came in studio. It's great. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is one of Chicago's greatest writers. His column has graced the Chicago Sun-Times sports page for over 22 years. Before that, Rick Tellender was a senior writer at Sports Illustrated. He's worked at ESPN. He's hosted sports radio. And, of course, he was part of the great ensemble that was the sports writers on TV. Tellender wrote the famous book Heaven is a Playground, where he chronicled the stories of playground basketball in Brooklyn, 1974. The book was made into a movie and widely considered one of the best sports books ever written. Rick is a sports columnist. He gives us his opinion, whether we either cheer it on or we throw the paper in the garbage. That's our decision, right? But Tellender has always written about the humanity in sports, what makes the stories connect on and off the field. And that's hard to do. And Tellender, he's won awards doing it. Look no further than his current series in the Sun-Times on violence in basketball at Orr High School on Chicago's West Side. The five-part series can be found at suntimes.com. Rick Tellender is my guest tonight at the big table. Rick, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Justin. Thank you.
I've been a longtime fan of yours. I feel like your face will always be that face that's in the paper of the Sun-Times. Talk about, let's start with the Orr High School series. This is what you've been working on. What drew you to this story in particular?
You know, it's hard to say. You mentioned Heaven is a Playground, the book that I wrote a long time ago. And, I wondered back then what drew me to that, what to go to an urban setting away from everything that I was familiar with in New York, in Brooklyn. I'm from Peoria, went to Northwestern, played football and everything, then was done. And I wanted to be a writer. I hadn't really told anybody that, but I was trying to think, what drove me to be a writer? What drove me to get into journalism? And I guess it's a whole path of self-discovery is really what it is, because we're all humans. We're all here on this planet. Mm-hmm. And if you don't understand how everybody else functions, those that maybe didn't come from the place you came from, then I don't think you really have a good idea of what's going on in the world. And maybe it was just a kind of innate curiosity, I guess. And then also, having grown up the way I did, everything was, I had a great childhood. Everything was great. I had a mom and a dad. We had a, middle-class house. I had a bike, a ball glove. Everything mm-hmm. was good. Great education. Safe. Always safe. I saw some guns when I was a kid. There were shotguns that somebody's going squirrel hunting with, or pheasant hunting. But I've always tried to place myself in somebody else's shoes. What would it be like if that were you? And for that Orr series, we know Chicago, and it's known around the world right now for the violence, the gun right. violence, which right. doesn't affect most of us. Let's be honest. Right. It just doesn't. There's parts of the city where it's just out of control, and other parts where, it's safe as can be. I don't think it's fair for me to rest in my little cocoon and not know what's going on in the other parts of this city. If this is what the big story is, and this is what the danger is, and this is the reputation of Chicago right now. And you go to Europe, go to South America, go anywhere, Africa, Asia, and they might say, hey, you're from Chicago. Is it safe there?
And there's something special about the idea that it is basketball. High school basketball is sacred in yes. Chicago. I mean, there's something that is just magical and mystical about being in a small gym in a Chicago public school as these kids play their hearts out. There's something there's something story-like about it.
First of all, I love the game of basketball. I really do. When James Naismith invented it in 1891, it was popular immediately in Springfield, Massachusetts. I mean, men loved it, kids loved it, girls loved it, women loved it, everybody. It's just like, boom. And it's one of the only games that was flat out invented. One day it didn't exist and the next day it did. Right, all the other right. ones kind of evolved.
They adapted, right.
Like we're kicking a head around in some medieval place and it becomes soccer. I love basketball. And so you're right. When you're in a gym, it's wintertime and you have a small team. Usually it's just a coach, maybe one other coach, an assistant or two. And then you have this team and it's very intense. It was something I could focus on. I was looking at maps, talking with our prep writer, Michael O'Brien.
Yeah, great writer. Yeah.
And also with our great Pulitzer Prize-winning crime reporter, Frank Main. And I said, look, I've written about the South Side. I wrote about Englewood and where Derek Rose is from, Murray Park. Did a series on that about, I don't know, 5 years ago or so. So the West Side is getting worse than the South Side. I don't know anything about it, really. What about these classic old high schools like Marshall and you know, there's a few others. Farragut is somewhat right. near. But Michael O'Brien said, you know, if you go to Orr, the coach there, Lou Adams, he'll be a great guy. I said, what is it? He said, well, all I can tell you is he's never lied to me. And so I thought, okay, you know, that's a good place to start. And then you look at a map of the violence in Chicago, the shootings and the killings. We had it in the Sun-Times, yeah. and just the map itself is chilling. Just since November, the thing was like just dotted with, it's a Google map, with yellow for shootings and then red for homicides. And it's Orr's right in the center of it.
It's crazy to think about yeah. that. When you show the maps in the piece, I read it on the website. It's amazing to think that there is a high school and there is not only a basketball program at that high school, but a thriving basketball program. I mean, the piece is not just about the coach, which is amazing, the complexity of coaching these kids and trying to be not only just a coach, but also a mentor and a father figure and have to be their person who bails them out of jail. There's so many things that goes into being a coach here, but to talk to the kids too, and the kids who have had tragedy that many of us will never know.
Yeah, it's heartrending, and I didn't try to, I didn't probe too hard when the guy started to back off a little bit, because you can get into very touchy, I don't want to say dangerous area, but very emotionally dangerous and fragile area with these kids very quickly. Like, you got any relatives in jail? You know, of course, a lot of them do. Have you had anybody near to you killed or shot? Yes. You know, but you don't want to continue on with that. And yet, I got close to these guys. I know all of their personalities now from watching them play, seeing them interact. And there's something about, you know, I happen to like teenage boys. I remember so well being one. And the one thing I can say about a teenage boy, nobody wants them around anywhere. They want to, you play some sports, you win at that, but nobody wants you at the mall. They don't want you hanging out in front of the right. store. Nobody wants you in their basement. Nobody wants you anywhere where there might be anything illegal, liquor, pot, nothing like that. They just don't really want you around. You're in between being a boy and being a man. And what are you supposed to do? So basketball is this great relief for these kids, a great, actually, it's a treasured thing that they have. And sometimes they lose it. And when they don't have it, there's a street out there, Ferdinand, near Pulaski. And I'd drive through the neighborhood, and there'd be these guys just hanging on the corner, young guys, you know, any time of day. And I asked Lou Adams, the coach, about it. He said, yeah, I know those guys. I'll drive past there, roll down my window and say, hey, coach, hey, man, you know I'm coming back. I'm coming back. Yeah. But they're not.
They're not.
And that's there. That temptation is there all the time. And I just remember myself, you know, I asked that question when the series started. How would I handle it? Would I make it? Right. I said, would you, putting it out there as a classic, kind of all-purpose pronoun or whatever, would you make it through? This is your situation. This is where you live. This is what people think of you. This is what your neighborhood is like. This is where the gangs are, the drugs, the guns, all this illicit behavior. Do you think you'd make it through? And a lot of people say, well, that's not me. Didn't happen to me. I'm up by the bootstraps. You know, I made it myself. And I just think, okay, I'd like you to trade places with one of these kids and see if you would. And by the end of the series, I concluded, knowing what I knew of myself, and I'm serious
ending,
about that. I thought about it long and hard, and I just don't think I would have made it.
Rick Tellender, my guest tonight. His series on basketball at Orr High School on Chicago's West Side is up at the suntimes.com, Suntimes website. Rick Tellender, longtime sports columnist here in Chicago. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back more with Rick at the big table. Stay with us.
Hey, check out.
My guest in studio at the big table tonight on the download, Rick Tellender. Rick Tellender, longtime Suntimes sports columnist, also the author of Heaven is a Playground. Considered one of the best books, sports books ever written. Rick is an award-winning journalist, senior. I mean, you've done everything in sports. And the Orr High School series about violence in basketball is up right now at suntimes.com. That's what we're talking about. You know, playground is a big part of your work. Heaven is a playground. You've talked about the idea of playground basketball and what basketball means to kids. In your piece, and this is tragic.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are talking about they don't go to the playground to play playground basketball. They don't go anymore because of the violence, because of the danger. They stay inside.
Yeah. That's the ultimate irony, tragic irony. Playgrounds are built, constructed for play. And in too many places in Chicago, they become the most dangerous place, a place where you can't play. You know, the parents will say, you know, play right in front of the house on the sidewalk. But no, we're not going to the park. Some of these kids might have to get to a park, for instance. And almost nobody has a car. You know, they just don't. They take public transportation, they walk, they might have a bike. But you might have to go, say, a mile or a half mile to the park.
Four blocks.
And you might go through two gang territories. And you're a teenage boy, somebody might just flash a gang sign at you, say, what are you about? And what do you say? What do you say? So they just avoid that because you could possibly, you know, you could get killed. You could be, anything could happen.
I mean, half of the stories about the kids at Orr High School that had run-ins with violence were mistaken identities.
Yeah.
Kids who were in the wrong place at the wrong time. They had anything to do with gangs. They just were accidentally shot because someone sprayed bullets into a crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my one that I mentioned were these two kids who were killed. There were 16 over on the west side. I think it was in December, maybe. And I just brought it up because there's so many twists and permutations to all these shootings and murders and homicides. Bullets don't stop. And this one skipped off the pavement, off the sidewalk, up the stairs, through a wooden door, hit a 65-year-old woman after these two kids were killed, and hit her in the leg. And she bled very heavily, broke a bone, but she lived, you know, but she lost a lot of blood. You know, it's that kind of mindlessness of a bullet. So you combine guns. There's so many answers to these things, and so none of them are absolute, obviously, right, to the problem. But we can just talk about guns. You take the teenage adolescent brain, which is not fully formed. You take it without governance, without someone telling you what to do, without having to be someplace.
Without a father figure saying no.
Exactly.
Right, that's just saying the piece, right?
Yeah, and that's quite often the case. And you're lucky if you got a teacher or a coach or somebody, an uncle, somebody who could take that role. Because I was talking the other night with some of the kids, and you know, a woman can do a lot, but she can't teach you how to be a man. Because, I can't teach my daughters how to be a woman. I can help them be human beings. So with the way that these guns are available, somebody can just get a hot head, and they're mad. They got thrown out of a party. They'll go and get a gun and come back and just spray it. And it's like, if you could get them to stop and think, stopping and thinking is not part of the deal. Do you want to spend, you know, your time? Yeah. Do you want to go to prison for 10 years? Can you envision that? And there's not that cause and effect element there. And that's what's dangerous to a lot of these kids that stay inside and play video games, one of the only safe places you can be. And we've seen in Chicago a lot of bullets piercing houses.
One of the safe places that used to be, I guess, in the history of Chicago when it comes to violence has been being an athlete. Benji Wilson is the famous story of the kid from Simeon who you're supposed to stay away from student athletes if you were gangs, if you're shooting. In this case, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was shot. He was killed. And that sort of idea, the way the city reacted to that, the idea that the athlete is off limits these days, it's gone.
That's gone. And you're right, the Benji Wilson story, I think it was 1984, right around there, 85. And, you know, Arne Duncan, the former Secretary of Education and also the head of the Chicago schools, we talked about this in this series I wrote, and he said, you know, that was a changing thing because athletes were, you know, you could, if you're marching along, you got your basketball shoes over your shoulder, you're going to the playground.
You had a purpose.
That's right. And you got a free pass. Well, that changed. And, you know, there have been a lot of, there was, I think, a 30 for 30 movie on ESPN about Ben Wilson. And they talked to the guy who shot him and killed him. And he was just young. And somebody told him, whether it was his mom or an uncle, somebody, if you ever take a gun, he took a .22, you never take it unless you're going to use it. And so he felt compelled to this weird, like, little code that he had to shoot Ben Wilson, you know, almost across the street from Simeon. And it was just a .22. You say just a .22, and he shot him, like, in the abdomen. Ben Wilson essentially bled to death. The trauma care was awful. Maybe he probably would have lived nowadays. But the point was, once you get that gun and the ability to do something like that, anything can happen. You can't say it was an accident when you shoot it up in the air, when you shoot it at, you spray a house and it happens to hit a little kid who's inside a house and you're just trying to scare somebody. I mean, if I were 16 and I had a handgun and I was angry and I had no direction, I mean, that's a horrible combination. Horrible, horrible combination.
It's interesting as we go back to the idea of playground. I mean, your book, Heaven is a Playground, and this idea in the series that you just did about the people staying away from the playground, and you add that to the fact that, you know, it's not off limits to be an athlete anymore. You can understand why there has just been a breakdown in other things besides violence or carrying a gun or being in gangs in some of these impoverished neighborhoods.
Yeah, you're right. And we need play. We need to have sports. Sports should be fun, and not just for the elite. You know, this OR team is full of elite players, and they've had many traumas on that team. You know, Danny Smith is having his breakout year this year. He's only a junior. He's 6'5", and he's just been playing terrifically. Every game that I see him play, he seems to be getting better. He's purposely on his own lost a lot of weight. He hadn't played for a couple of years. He went to Lincoln Park, and his self-discipline is incredible. And his two best friends were twins. They all transferred, and those two went to Marshall, and they were good buddies. And those two kids were shot down on Hudson Street over Old Town, near the Old Town area. And Danny said to me, you know, I was going to be with them. And they weren't in a gang. The cops have said they were not in a gang, but they may have been with some guys. You know, you have friends who were in gangs. They're just guys you grew up with. They may be a little loud and boisterous or whatever. You may not even know exactly what beef they have with somebody else. So when you have that kind of thing and people are afraid to play sports, it's just an awful combination. It feeds on itself. Yeah. The grass and a ball and a back, you know, everything. All these sports should be available to everybody, you know?
Rick Tellender is, of course, the longtime sports columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times. His book is Heaven is a Playground, which is one of the greatest sports books of all time, back from in the mid-70s. You can find the piece he did on Orr High School and violence in basketball at suntimes.com. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Rick Tellender about sports and Chicago here on the Big Table. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Rick Tellender in studio, the longtime Chicago sports columnist at the Sun-Times. Before that, Sports Illustrated. He's been at ESPN. He's hosted sports radio. He was part of the ensemble Sports Writers on TV. I mean, I could go on.
please don't.
He's also the author of the great book, Heaven is a Playground, which is considered one of the best sports books ever written, about playground basketball, 1974 in Brooklyn. Also, his series on basketball and violence at Orr High School is right now up at thesuntimes.com. You've done most of your reporting and most of your writing in the Chicago area. You spent some time in New York, you know, obviously with this book and Heaven is Playground, but Chicago has been your home. What makes this town a great sports town? Or maybe I should ask, is it a great sports town?
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. And I don't think that any other place compares with it. We can rule out immediately all the places like, Denver, San Diego, or Seattle. I mean, those are nice and all that, but they exist for some other reason. Chicago is the heartland. It's the middle of the country. A lot of people don't like New York. A lot of people don't like L.A. Everybody in some way has a relative or somebody in Chicago. They like Chicago. That's like when we did the Sports Writers on TV with Bill Gleason and Joust and Ben Bentley. There we are, the Sports Writers on TV. Young Tellender, I go to you. And the cigar smoke going all over the place.
Still one of the best shows ever done in Chicago.
But people like that because they can say, look at, come here, kids. Look at it. This is Chicago. Because it went all over the country on cable. But yes, it is a great sports town. First of all, we have two baseball teams. So you rule out almost every other city. Boston does not. New York does. L.A., I guess you could call the Angels and the Dodgers. And San Francisco has, the Oakland, it's across the bay.
Right.
But Chicago, you know, they're 35 blocks to Madison from Wrigley, or 35 to down to the cell or whatever we call it now. What is it called?
Guaranteed rate.
Yeah,
field.
Guaranteed rate. Sorry. I still call it Comiskey. And 35 to Wrigley. So that's 71 blocks on the L that can get you there. So that's incredible
Do you believe in the idea that the teams take on the spirit and the, I guess, the feel of the town? You know, we always talk about the monsters of the Midway with the Chicago Bears or even the Cubs. Do you feel that's a reality, or is that just a myth that the fans put on the sport that they're watching?
Well, I think they would like to see the teams take on the personality of the city. Can the teams always do that? I mean, look, the Bears fans want a tough defense. They don't necessarily want a run-and-shoot offense where you score 55 points and the other team scores 53, although any win would be nice here, you know, after you go 3-13. But with the Bulls, they want a tough team. They want a very tough team.
Right.
And in baseball, hockey, absolutely. With the Blackhawks. But one thing I've seen in Chicago, and I think this is a fair assessment through all the years, that if a player tries really hard, the fans are knowledgeable and they know that. I remember they used to cheer Will Perdue, not the most graceful guy out on the floor, but he always hustled. And he might dive for a ball going out of bounds and be a big cheer at the United Center. I've seen that a lot of places. And the fans here know when a player is a jerk. They just do. And it's one reason why Jay Cutler's never really been at home here because, you know, God bless Jay. He's doing a lot better. And I think he has some almost social phobias or whatever,
right,
where he's just not
socially awkward. Yeah.
Yeah. And that didn't, you know, people wanted something else from the quarterback of the Chicago Bears. They wanted a tough guy or something different. So, it's fair in a way, but if you're a coach here, I think you will definitely feel the pressure if you're a general manager.
I mean, how unforgiving is this town? I think of some of the players that do take on, like, the Jay Cutler personas or the coaches that don't last, like the Mark Trestman. I mean, this town can turn quick. I mean, is that normal? I mean, is that something that's shared in Jacksonville or Tennessee or Indianapolis? Or is that something that, in a way, there's a positive that everybody loves sports and this is a great sports town, but if you're on the wrong side of that,
Yeah, you're going to get nailed. You have a lot of rewards if you do well. You know, obviously a lot more than you would if you were in Jacksonville or even Atlanta. I've been down there for Bulls games to the Hawks games, and, you know, the stadium won't be filled. Atlanta almost never is. And yet when Michael Jordan was playing, they played in the Georgia Dome, I believe. They moved in there, and they had something like 50,000 people for a regular season game. So, you know, we had that history of Michael Jordan and the Bulls, the greatest player ever, and one of the most amazing tenures right there. It was like the Beatles going around. I can vouch for that because I was following them around. We had the White Sox win the World Series in 2005. All of a sudden, they just blew through it. They almost had very little drama after the first series against the Red Sox. And then the Cubs last year. I mean, what else do you need to know? This was global news. This wasn't just national.
But it does play into that ethos of what we were just talking about, this like hardworking hustle. We want the team to be tough. All the teams you mentioned that won kind of took on that personality. Even the Cubs this year, young team that wasn't fazed by, I mean, even the lore that we heard about Jason Hayward going into the locker room during the rain delay and yelling at his players.
Yeah.
I mean, it all fits into this storyline that I don't know. I guess the question I have just as a sports fan, but also as a journalist, is that manufactured? Is that just sort of the fairy dust that we put on to make us continue to want to watch these sports, or is it something real?
I think it's real. Chris Bryant, take Chris Bryant. That smile is real. That kind of modesty is real. He hit a big home run. I mean, he hit so many big clutch ones. But his teammates are trying to throw him out to go and do a tip of the cap and wave to the crowd. He wouldn't do it. You know, it's like, I'm not worthy of that. And he means it. It's not some false modesty. Michael Jordan, they liked his arrogance, but they loved the fact that when us,
right, yeah.
When the stadium was being closed down, it was 1993, and he had just retired. It was going to be his last game. I can't remember how it went, but he went out and kissed the floor, the Bull, at center court, you know. People remember that stuff. They remember Dennis Rodman playing hard, not being just a complete jerk that he was in San Antonio.
Right.
He was a team and a coach killer down there. He got to Chicago. He was not. And I think the fans here are very, very much aware. If you're a jerk, you look at the Cubs last year, I don't see a jerk on that team. You know, people were worried about Aroldis Chapman coming in. You know, he had a little bit of, the, you know, was there some domestic violence or whatever going on? We don't know. He was a perfect citizen here, didn't complain about anything. And you talk about somebody fitting in. Joe Maddon comes from, you know, small town Pennsylvania. He's a little wacky, you know, but we had Phil Jackson, who was, you know, the Zen guru guy, burning incense, having the players meditate. They'd turn the lights down in the gym, and they would go through the stuff. Believe me, he was way ahead of his time. And here's the other beauty of Chicago. It took a guy like Jerry Krause, who nobody really liked, kind of, you know, this guy that always is just sort of odd and socially inappropriate and all, but he picked Phil Jackson, as different from him as you could find a person, and yet he recognized the genius of Phil with the team that they were putting together.
It's fascinating to think about. I mean, you get into the psyche of Chicago, coaches like Mike Ditka or Ozzie Guillen or Phil Jackson or Joe
Maddon.
Think
of those three guys. Yeah. Those are three in three different sports that are as different and as rare and unusual.
But they're unusual. There's something about it that we gravitate to as Chicago fans. Rick Tellender, my guest in studio, he's got his piece up at the Sun-Times right now on violence in basketball at Orr High School. Of course, the longtime Chicago sports columnist. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the Big Table. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the Big Table tonight, longtime Chicago sports columnist Rick Tellender. He's got a great piece on Orr High School. You got to check it out at suntimes.com. Also, the author of Heaven is a Playground, which is considered one of the best sports books ever written. I mean, it's interesting, you know, what I got to ask the question. I mean, this is one that I feel in the last couple of years, especially when it comes to football, a little bit of basketball. We even see it with we kind of mentioned it with Aroldis Chapman. What takes the joy away from sports, Rick?
Well, obviously, big money makes it difficult. The second thing is teams trying to protect everybody and having very, very circumscribed moments when you can speak to a coach, to a player. If you walk up to a player now at Hallis Hall and you just say, hey, how are you doing? And a PR guy might come up and say, hey, you can't talk now. We used to be able to just, I would grab Ditka whenever I wanted to. I'd grab Jim McMahon, anybody, Eric Kramer, any of these guys. You just grab him in the hallway and say, hey, Eric, you know, now you're not supposed to do that. And I remember talking, it was just the other couple years ago, talking to who's a Brandon Marshall, and he was coming off the field, and Brandon always has a big smile and self promoter and all that. And I said, "Hey, Brandon, and he said, "Hey, I talk on Wednesdays." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, you know, that's cool." So that gets in the way. I don't like that stuff. They always say you should not see how the sausage is made. And see, I love sausage. I love hot dogs. Everybody says, not ever go to a slaughterhouse.
Yeah, right.
And I said, I'd still like it. I don't care. They sweep it up off the floor. But anyway, when you do that, when you find out how everything works and you find the, how venal people can be and how it's all about money and how coaches lie to players and things like that, you don't want to see that. But you'll find that in any business. And the one thing I have found that has sustained me through the years is that the athletes are the same. They really are. And I'll go way back to when Joe Namath was playing and Steve Carlton, he was a jerk. He was a raging jerk. And that was back in, the early 70s. You know, they didn't invent jerks nowadays. there were some really bad guys. Albert Bell, I tried to talk to him one time in a dugout before a World Series game, and he started to walk towards me silently holding a bat in his hand, very slowly, like out of a movie, like some monster movie. And it was just bizarre. But in general, the players love the game. They happen to be incredibly skilled. That's one thing that people forget. They ask George Brett, you must really practice hitting the ball all the time. He said, I could always hit a baseball. Always.
That's the
thing, okay? Well, some guys can just do that. But then the rest of the part of them, they're normal people with normal flaws, huge flaws. Quite often they're not well adjusted. And I find I really like doing stories on amateurs, on high school kids, because they're right there. They're raw,
Everything's in front of them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's interesting because we've seen with the politics, we've seen with the Trump administration and the mainstream media kind of get at each other. You've seen the Trump say that the media is the enemy of the people. And every time I hear that, I go, this reminds me of sports. It reminds me of what sports media has gone through with the players and with the coaches and with the organizations. I mean, there has been a breakdown in the communication between the media, which is the mouthpiece for the fans and the organizations. And this town is not immune to that. We've seen many times where coaches and others have gone off on the media not getting stories right, or the media is being the enemy of the sport.
Yeah, and I will salute Joe Maddon for not being like that. Joe is like, when I first press conference that I was at, and I said, you know, it was after a game, and I said, Joe, this is a kind of a weird question. That's how I prefaced it. And he stopped and said, hey, cool, man, I love weird questions. It's like, all right, yes, this is going to be great. And he's been terrific. He obviously hasn't had a lot to complain about, although now people are blaming him for the way it went, you know, using Chapman too much. And even though they won the seventh game, he, you know, it was bad managing that got it even close. So, but he hasn't reacted to that. I think what we're seeing in big sports is the TV revenue just keeps going up and up, and the people that run the product want to control it, as anybody does. You want to control everything around
it. Right, absolutely.
And as you can control more and more, you will do that. And you can do that by pulling in the fence that where the media is kind of chirping away at. And players now have the ability, for instance, and we know our great president does, to tweet, which theoretically you can reach everybody all the time. You don't need the newspapers or radios. You can do a blog if you wish. You can do anything.
Right.
Derek Jeter started his a very interesting thing. It's for athletes only. It's called, the Athlete Journal or something like that. And any athlete, any pro athlete can write for that, and it will be put online, and they can write their own essays. Been some pretty good stuff there, you know. But what they're trying to do is control the message, which everybody wants to do. That's why we have marketing and PR firms. You want to control the message. It's about advertising, what have you. But, you know, while I was waiting here, when you were on air earlier, I was out in the atrium there, and all those, there's those chiseled
things. All
the quotes
and things, yeah.
Amazing, that atrium, where you see these great words about freedom of the press from some great Americans. And going back even to Britain, and they talk about the value of a free press. The free press is not your enemy, not anybody's enemy. When we have tyranny, when we have bad things happen, it's because there isn't a free press. And mistakes, yes, everybody's going to make a mistake. You better apologize when you make one. But it's not like you're doing it on purpose. And when Donald Trump went on his rant about libel, I'm going to change the libel laws, he doesn't realize that he's so protected. He can sue anybody he wants to. Now, he might not win. It has to be reckless disregard for the truth. You have to know you're wrong. And some people do that. And, in fact, I could argue that what he just said about Barack Obama is libel.
I was going to say, I mean, in your profession as a columnist, I mean, part of the fun of it is that sometimes you are wrong.
Yes.
I mean, that you say, we're not going to win the World Series this year.
Yeah, okay, well, I haven't said that. I mean, every year my hard shell got built up. You know, it's been 90 years. It's been 95. It's been 100. It's been 108. We're never going to win. And Theo Epstein, God bless his soul, has been very, very nice to all of us about that. He's not come up to us and said,
see,
jerks.
I told you so.
Yeah,
right?
you low-life scum who doubted the plan. You know, the whole idea of the free press and being able to say what you want to say and occasionally be wrong, to have an opinion, because obviously when I'm in the sports field, I don't generally almost never ask for somebody to be fired. I don't know if I've asked for somebody's head. I basically said that Jay Cutler shouldn't come back as a quarterback for the Bears, just as time for a change. But I'm not going to say, fire this guy, fire that guy. I think what I write becomes obvious because you are dealing with these people's livelihoods a lot of times.
For you, as we wrap here, I mean, to think back to your childhood, you talked about it at the beginning, growing up in Peoria, to playing football at Northwestern. As you think about your career and how it's played out as a writer, and you think back to the ambitions you had or the dreams you had to be an athlete,
mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you've accomplished that by being in the sport, being in the sport arena, or do you feel like, man, I wish I wasn't a writer. I wish I was a player.
No, I got over that. That's a fascinating, I think, to look back in your childhood. I remember being like 5 years old really well. My childhood is burnished in my brain, and I was. The title of my autobiography is going to be Hungry. I was always hungry. I was starving. I would eat any kid's house. I'd go and eat food. But all we did was play. We played, and if you stayed in the house, your mom said, you better get out of here. You guys better go do something because I got plenty for you to do in the house. And kids all over, we'd get on our bikes. We'd play sports all day long. I think my other real goal was I fell in love with the English language, with the printed word. It was a true love affair. It still is to this day. And it's a mistress, if you will, that I can never fully possess. But it's a palette of words. I think English language has more words than any other language. I believe that's true. I know there have been some great writers like Joseph Conrad and others who've changed from their native language to write in English because it's so fertile. Nabokov. And so I wanted to use that to express myself. And I figured, what better way than to write about sports, which I love, and the people in it? Because it's only the people. The games are obvious. You watch those. Those are great. But it's the people that fascinate me.
Rick Tellender, always fascinating us. Chicagoans, longtime sports columnist for the Sun-Times. Also the author of Heaven is a Playground, which looked at playground basketball in Brooklyn, 1974. He's got a great, unbelievable series that you have to check out at suntimes.com about Orr High School basketball and violence. Orr still in the high school basketball tournament right now.
Yeah, they're going downstate. They won the Super Sectional in Joliet last night, and there are four teams now down in Peoria that will be playing on Friday and Saturday.
Rick, I can't thank you enough. Thanks for being my guest.
Thanks, Justin.
Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 9:30, very excited to have Arène Jacob, the famed French actress. She has won Best Actress at Cannes. She's been in several foreign films, and she's also starring in the Showtime show The Affair. She's great, and she's singing with her brother. And we had her on probably a week ago on the phone. She was in New York, and she was coming to Chicago, and she did a show at Alliance Francaise. And we had her on the phone because her stuff is just tremendous. His music's so good. Her and her brother played like a Brazilian jazz, like a world music hybrid French jazz. And so last week, I said, okay, is there any way? And then we did the interview. Is there any way you could come over to the studio? And so Pete and I, there was one of the nights we had the Blackhawks game on here. They came over at night, and we stayed, and they did, before their sound check, they performed some songs, so we'll play them tonight, just so I feel like that's a nice added treat, since we had a beautiful, wonderful French singer on the phone. So it's never a good way to have a French singer on the show is on the phone, so we made up with it by recording some songs. So that'll be coming up at 9:30 tonight. Well, the Thodos Dance Company will be performing their signature contemporary dance at the Auditorium Theater this Saturday night. This is an anticipated show. It's a show called Full Circle, and it's a celebration of the company's 25th anniversary, and it's a celebration of the end. The Thodos Dance Company is closing shop after the performance, but not for good, just to retool. Melissa Thodos has been the leader of the seminal dance company, creating new work and a thriving in a dance community that's seen huge growth since she got started in 1992. Melissa Thodos is here in studio. Melissa, thanks for being here. Good to meet you.
Oh, great to meet you, and thanks so much for having me.
Also joining us in studio tonight, Walter Kennedy, a former dancer with Bella Lewitsky's company. Bella Lewitsky, a legendary West Coast choreographer who will be premiering a piece on Saturday as part of the show. Walter, thanks for being here as well.
Great to be here.
All right, so let's talk. Melissa, 25 years. This is a big 25th anniversary show. And it's also the end. Am I being too hyperbolic in saying it's the end?
Too hyperbolic. I love it. No, it's a chapter that's closing, and there's a new chapter being written. It is not an end. I have a creative life that will continue well past the company. And within the company, we are restructuring and we are reforming in a way where we can be more creatively fluid in the future.
What does that mean? What do you mean?
What that means is I'm very interested in working with many more artists and with collaborating. I had the opportunity to work with Yoko Ono recently and do a site-specific piece for her first North American sculpture in Jackson Park.
Yeah, right.
It was amazing. And then I also had the privilege of working with Jeannie Gang, who did serve on my board in the early days in around 2000 when we began a choreography project that was very inspired by her own creativity.
But so it gives you more flexibility to not just
more
be be a dance company that does a show every so often and does it at a run at like the Auditorium Theater, but you give it a chance to do things a little bit more outside the box.
A little more outside the box, which interests me as an artist right now, and also working with many more artists, working with many more dancers. And I have to be honest, I'm not great at the day-to-day. It's not my forte. My forte is really creativity, and that's the direction I'm going, and I'm going with the dancers too. So less day-to-day operations and more focus on thinking outside of the box.
I mean, because when we hear something like, when we hear about a dance company or a theater company or any sort of arts entity saying they're closing up shop, usually it's financially, it has something to do with finances, not being able to make the budget, things of that nature. That's not the case with you guys. I mean, you guys are healthy. You're financially healthy. This is really just a creative choice.
That's exactly right. And as the founder of the company, I really feel, and we started so grassroots. I mean, we started with two dancers, and I was one of them, and that was way back in the day. And we only did my work for a long time, and then I started inviting my colleagues in the community, and then my colleagues from the National Dance Landscape, and then I created a legacy project so we could bring in Bella's work. And so we grew and expanded, and then I produced my own artist's work, and we do a lot of community work and touring and all of that. And at 25 years, I looked at it and I said, you know what? We've accomplished everything we set out to do.
Walter, as a former dancer and someone who is in such an esteemed company as Bella Lewitsky, talk about what it means to be part of this 25th anniversary and to premiere the work.
Oh, it's very exciting. It just brings me back in some ways because Bella's company closed up shop in the same sort of manner in 1997. And, you know, I was there at the time, and it was very, it was a very strong statement that Bella made at the time about kind of, you know, she was in her 80s at the time, and it was really time for her to move on away from the day-to-day, as Melissa said, of trying to keep a company just going. All of that stuff was wearing on her, and she just wanted to use the time she had left to be creative and not have to do that other part of it. And it was a good decision, and it's been looked on, I know, in the arts administration world as a model of how to do that.
That's so, you know? I you don't think about the idea of how you transition out of your own company, I mean, or any sort of artistic company. Most of the time, the company's name continues, or maybe the board members will change, or the administrators will change. But this is sort of a creative way to think about the administrative aspect of running an arts company.
Indeed, absolutely. And as the founder, as Bella was, there's a big responsibility about what succession might or might not mean. And so that was something that was thought about very thoroughly and for quite a while.
All right. Well, this is a segment about dance. We've been talking a lot about administration. Let's talk about dance.
Let's do that.
Melissa Thotos and Walter Kennedy. All right. You know what I'll do? I'm going to take a quick break, and then we come back. It's just going to be all dance. I want to know. I'm so interested. There's such great contemporary work that you guys have been doing. And I think about Joffrey, and I think of Hubbard Street. This town has turned into a dance mecca, if you will. I mean, it's really exciting to think of Chicago as a world leader when it comes to contemporary dance, and a lot of it has to do with your work, Melissa. So we'll continue the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. Melissa Thotos and Walter Kennedy in studio with me tonight. We're talking about the big show, the Thotos Dance Company, contemporary dance at the Auditorium Theater, the 25th anniversary show, and the last for Thotos Dance Company. There's a retooling going on, but this will be the last in its current iteration. The show's called Full Circle. It's on stage at the Auditorium on Saturday. Melissa and Walter in studio tonight. You've had such a career here in Chicago, Melissa. It's amazing to think about that it's been 25 years of doing contemporary dance, both as a dancer and as a founder of the company and moving into a more leadership role. Talk about what Chicago was like when it came to the dance scene, dancers and dancing in 1992, the early 90s.
Oh, absolutely. Chicago was such a hub for contemporary dance. There was so much going on. And particularly, there was a lot of support financially coming in from a lot of different places nationally and on the state level and in many different contexts, foundations, so much more than today in the context that a lot of stuff used to come in and through town. So we were really exposed to so much in the contemporary dance world. And I had a lot
like
of
touring, like other people coming through and
coming and, through and then doing master class work. And that was my exposure to the Bela Lewitsky technique. It came in from California. And a big reason for my wanting to bring this legacy work to Chicago is that we don't get a lot of the West Coast here. And Bella was the grand dame of modern dance in California.
Let me ask you, I feel that I'm a little bit of a novice when it comes to contemporary modern dance techniques. I'll tell you that right now. I'll be upfront. I'm being transparent. But I'm interested that there are different techniques in different parts of the country. So there's you've mentioned now a couple of times the West Coast or Bella's technique in the West Coast. Is it differentiate? I mean, is there a New York style? Is there a Chicago style of modern dance?
There's a vibe. I don't know what else to say. When someone sees work on the West Coast and from the West Coast, it has a completely different feel and style to it.
Really?
And aesthetic. Absolutely. And Bella studied with Lester Horton. She was his muse. And he is a national pioneer and legend, if you will. And she created her own style and methodology from that. And I think that Walter can probably speak to that a little more.
Well, I mean, to your question, I always feel like when I'm talking to my students about history of modern dance and contemporary dance, I always say, family trees. Look at the family trees because so-and-so came from so-and-so and so-and-so came from so-and-so. And they happen to be on different coasts. And it is specifically the West Coast. Lester Horton was based in Los Angeles for many years, and that's where his company was. And that family tree sprang the most well-known person to come from the Horton Company is Alvin Ailey.
Right.
And Bela Lewitsky was one of Alvin's first modern dance teachers.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So they're all,
it's all
that's
tied
that
together.
Side of
and,
the...
And when you talk about technique and style... Right, I mean, you could because there's vibe is one thing, but when I think of modern dance, and I like I said, I'm a novice. I'm not. I couldn't tell you what a move is called when I watch a Hubbard Street or a Thotos piece, but I know that there's some technique and style. There's something that formally happened in front of my eyes. Talk about that. I mean, is there's so much interpretation that goes into modern dance because you're not necessarily following just the formal, you know, style, the classic style of a ballet or what we may know from. You know, classical dance. There's a lot of ways to experiment and push the medium. Does Chicago do that? I mean, what are the what differentiates Chicago from a different scene where we may be trying things? I mean, risking different moves, things of that nature.
Well, Chicago absolutely does that. Chicago sports over 100 dance companies here in Chicago, and it's amazing. And they are all. Sizes and all focuses and all missions, and it's quite amazing. And Chicago there's something for everyone here. It's attractive for a dancer to come here because the standard of living is really doable. It's a friendly, wonderful city. It's vibrant. It has an incredible art scene, and there's so much possibility here for an artist. In terms of the contemporary dancer, they for performing and as part of Thotos Dance Chicago, a ballet background or foundation is important. And that's where the dancer is very aligned. And then contemporary teaches the dancer how to use that technique and then get off center instead of staying on center. And so it's kind of a dual education, if you will. And
is that an easy thing for dancers to do?
Well, it's a commitment. And so the dancers of Thotos Dance Chicago all have Bachelor of Fine Arts or master's degrees because they are interested in a very honed experience, which we provided because our mission is unique here in the city, because it's a mission that embraces three different areas of dance. It's tripartite. So we engage our dancers as performers, which you'll see on March 11th at the auditorium. And then we also produce their work in their own performance and concert professionally that's reviewed, and we book a theater and all of that, so they can start working on their own passion for choreography, and we also engage them as teachers.
Walter, let me ask you, you're bringing the Bella piece here. This is, you were part of the company. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is a restaging. As a dancer, a former dancer who is bringing work that you were involved in, that you performed on stage, and now you're staging it with other dancers. Is that hard to do? Is that hard to do as a director to once have been the person who's do you have to stop and say, you know what, I'll do it. Let me do this part.
Well, it's a tricky thing, especially with choreography like Bella's, because it was done in a very specific fashion, and you trained with Bella in a very specific way for a very long period of time over many years to develop this sort of shared aesthetic. And when Melissa contacted me about doing a Bella work, we talked quite a bit about what this means in terms of what kind of a time commitment and, you know, what are the dancers like? And I had to really look to see if it was possible. And I was so happy to see the versatility of the Thotos Company dancers. Right? They're beautiful and they've been trained beautifully. They can do a lot of wonderful things. And, you know, I said, let's try it. And let's try this really big piece that is kind of a, you know, a signature piece.
Melissa, I'm going to have you back, because I have so many questions about, and I had a whole stack of questions about just the ballets that you've created. And we're going to run out of time. The Auditorium Theater, I mean, that is such an amazing historic theater, and it's huge. Is it for you, I mean, in your company, thinking 25 years to starting in small stages to working your way up to playing at the Auditorium Theater, what's that mean to you that your company and your name is on stage in front of in such a historic place?
Oh, it could not be more meaningful. And you know, it's funny because I've been so busy, like going and going and building and building and growing and trying to reach this goal which we have, and it is truly an honor, and it is truly, not to sound too trite, but I'm going to go ahead, it really is why we call this performance full circle, in the context is we've really accomplished everything, and we are at the epitome of where we want to be today and celebrating these past 25 years growth.
How does it feel? I mean, the idea that not only is it the 25th anniversary, but this will be the last show in this arc or this chapter of your career.
Oh, it's quite bittersweet. I mean, it really is. There's so much ahead. There's so much neat, wonderful potential projects up ahead that I'm excited about. But there's also some goodbyes around it. So it's beautifully bittersweet, but it's not a true goodbye. It's more, I really feel it's more a see you later. It really is that.
Melissa Thotos, Walter Kennedy in studio tonight. The show is called Full Circle. It's the Thotos Dance, Chicago Thotos Dance Company, performing their signature contemporary dance at the Auditorium Theater this Saturday night, March 11th. Walter Kennedy will be restaging a Bella Lewitsky piece. What's the name of the piece?
It's called Nostra Aeturi, which is Latin for We Who Shall Survive.
Yeah, right on. There we go. I'm going to steal that. There we go.
Yeah.
Melissa Thotos, Walter Kennedy, my guest tonight here on The Download. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rob. It's a Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. That was fun to talk to Melissa Thotos, Walter Kennedy. You know, it's one of those things. It's hard to talk about dance on the radio because you can't see it. But anyone who's seen a dance show, and I've had the good fortune of being able to check out some things like in this town, like Melissa said, there's 100 dance companies. And every time I go and I watch contemporary dance, I'm like, how can you do that? How can you, as a human being, how can you do that with your body? It's fascinating to me. Like, I know that a lot of people listening may not know much about dance or may think about, I always sort of liken it to sports. Like when you're like, I can't believe watching a basketball player dunk that basketball, you know, or a hockey player be able to skate down the ice and fend off two players with a little disc, a little puck. And be able to insert it in a goal, right? Like there's fluidity and motion, and watching how human bodies are able to do that's amazing. And dance is no different. When you watch that stuff, I'm always like, I'm just like, what? This is unbelievable. So, Melissa Thotos, we gotta have her back so we can talk more about. I love that the idea that formal dance training is on center, about your body being center, about it being a straight line. And then contemporary dance is about getting off center, not being in that straight line. I would have such a hard time if I were a dancer. You want me to do what? Which way? Which way do you want my arm to go? All right. They're going to be at the Auditorium Theater on Saturday night. All right, so I talked about this early in the show. I'm very excited about this. Irène Jacob and her brother Francis Jacob are two great French musicians, a brother and sister combo who have been touring the United States. They came through Chicago last week and played at Alliance Française. We had Irène on the phone, and she was in New York. I think it was on Monday night, and talking about the show. But I was so enamored with the music. I loved it. It was so beautiful. And it was I was really trying to get them to come in studio. I wanted to do it live, but they were only here for the show. They're on such a tight schedule that they actually flew in, did the show, flew out. I think they went right straight to Richmond or something like that right after the fact. But I was able to convince them because that Wednesday night, we had a Blackhawks game, so we weren't on the airs, but I convinced them to come over after soundcheck. They only had like 20 minutes to spare to give us a performance. So tonight we thought we'd play some of that music. Does that sound good? I think it sounds good. Irène Jacob and her brother Francis live in studio. We taped this last week. Take a listen.
So this is Irène and Francis Jacob. We are going to perform for you Communion. Je creuserai tous les nuages, je verserai dans les secrets qui, depuis le tréfonds des âges, nous protègent du regret.
J'évoquerai dans ton sillage, sans connaître les aguets, dérivant jusqu'à tes bois, tes guérets.
Tu es ma fleur d'Alice, ma faucille, mon marteau, mon rosaire, mon calice, ma croix de huguenot. Je percerai les vieux langages depuis longtemps oubliés. Dans leurs préceptes sages, je saurai te retrouver.
Je voguerai dans ton sillage, je boirai dans tes ruisseaux officiants, le joyeux partage de ma bouche et de ton eau.
Tu es ma fleur de lys, ma faucille, mon marteau, mon rosaire, mon calice, ma croix de huguenot. Je ferai parler les étoiles, j'écouterai le vent chanter son vieux cantique dans mes voiles, sera mon seul timonier.
Je m'enivre en ton absence, je te sens à mes côtés et brave dans l'indifférence les orages de mes étés.
Tu es ma fleur de lys, ma faucille, mon marteau, mon rosaire, mon calice, ma croix de huguenot. Mais tic-tac fait l'horloge, tout mon sable s'est écoulé. Et par le temps qui déloge, Voici mes songes expulsés.
Il sait que l'amour pardonne le temps pour lui renverser, mais malgré tout l'heure sonne, cette chanson est terminée.
Wonderful. The music of Irène and Francis Jacob, French singers and songwriters, a band. They're performing all around the United States on a tour. Irène Jacob is a award-winning French Swiss actress and musician. Her brother Francis plays music in New York City. That's where he lives now. Like I said, they're on tour, and they just played Chicago last week, and we had the great fortune of getting them over to studio before the show, and we're playing the stuff tonight. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. There's more. They performed again. They performed another song for us tonight, so we will play another song from Irène and Francis Jacob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Greg Flamm, the Swap Meet. But before we do that, let's hear some more music. Irène and Francis Jacob, great French singers and songwriters, a band that is touring the United States right now. They came through last week. They were on the show. If you remember, last Monday, we talked to Irène on the phone. But they had a show at Alliance Francaise right here in Streeterville on Wednesday night, and there was a Blackhawks game. And I don't know, after listening to their music and sort of falling in love with their sound, we just kept at it, saying, if there's any way you come by the sound check, we'll tape you and we'll play it later. And they were able to do it, so they came through. I mean, they were on a tight schedule, and they did this for us. So let's hear some more live music from Irène and Francis Jacob, and I talk with them a little bit afterwards as well.
Hey, this is Irène Jacob and Francis Jacob. We're going to perform for you La Cigale, the Cricket. La cigale est enchantée, on me l'a tout raconté tout l'été. Se trouva fort dépourvue quand la bise fut venue. Elle alla crier famine chez la fourmi, sa voisine. La priant de lui prêter quelques grains pour subsister jusqu'à l'été. Que faire en attendant la saison nouvelle? Quand la famine crie et les fourmis voisines festoient et que le froid en sorcelle. La seule façon de subsister, c'est de danser.
Oublier, danser, jusqu'à l'été. Danser, sans repos, danser, jusqu'au temps chaud.
Chantais, j'en suis fort
aise. Et bien danser.
Nuit et jour à tout venant, je chantais, ne vous déplaise.
Vous chantiez.
Je chantais, ne vous déplaise, chantais, j'en suis fort
aise. Et bien danser.
Que faire en attendant la saison nouvelle? Quand la famine crie et les fourmis voisines festoient et que le froid ensorcelle. La seule façon de subsister, c'est de danser. La saison se succède, ne se ressemble guère, je passe du succès à la vache maigre, mais je tiens bon, car je n'ai pas le choix. Je taquine les lettres, les rimes, dans mes bottes je suis droit. Ce qui me tient n'a pas de prix ni de nom, d'aucun diron, pure folie, je dis folle passion. Je suis le chant de l'espoir qui vit contre le désespoir qui prive. Danser, oublier, danser, jusqu'à l'été. D'aucuns diront pure folie, moi je dis folle passion. Folle passion.
Et
jusqu'au danger. Wonderful music in studio. I can't thank you guys for coming in. It's just amazing to be in the room with you when you play that music. Erin Jacob and her brother Francis Jacob, a wonderful performance. You guys were just in town here in Chicago for a show at Allianz Francaise, and it was just wonderful to have you in studio. Talk about this music. Francis, I had a chance to talk with Erin already about where the style of this comes from. Is this a French jazz? Is this a French folk? Where is it, world music? Where do you classify this kind of music?
Well, that's a great question. At the root of everything, we try to be honest with ourselves, exactly, and not to try to create something out of the blue. As I was trained initially in classical music, then listening to French songs as a kid, and then I went to Berklee College of Music in the early 80s, studied jazz. After that, I went to Paris. Mm-hmm. We did some jazz. Then I went to Brazil. I lived in Brazil for a while. And then I went to New York and worked a lot with African musicians.
You can hear all of that in the music. That's what's wonderful about not just what we heard live, but also, you know, on the record. I mean, yeah. All that kind of coming together.
Well, thank you for saying this, because it's great. I mean, it's a great compliment, because this is what we're trying to do, is to be honest with exactly show where we stand in this world today, what we hear, what we do, and translate it into the music.
You talked earlier about the idea of the French jazz singer to the history of you know, where you sort of bring the music from. Talk mm-hmm. about how this music brings that out. I mean, as you as a French singer, but also what you're trying to accomplish with your brother.
Well, we are trying to accomplish today to make this project alive together. And for me, as an actress, you know, I try to see where I believe that in each person there is a song and there is a place that sings, right? And trying to find this place that sings. I think this is sincere, meaning then from there you can try to expand a bit your singing. But I'm trying to come... I come from the storytelling and try to perform the songs with the story it tells. We wrote the lyrics together, and of course I try to adapt also to these new rhythmics that Francis is
on the record. I mean, are you what is the story you're trying to tell? I mean, mm-hmm. talk about writing the lyrics and the experience because you are I guess you're first and foremost an actress, but you're also a musician. Does when you're telling stories, what comes first, the story of the song?
Usually the story, but for Francis, sometimes it's the music that comes first. And he's, I have this great music, look, this melody, can you put some lyrics into it? Or do you have an idea? But let's talk about the two songs we just performed. The first one, Communion, is a song that Francis wrote completely, and he can talk about it, of course, later. And The Cricket is an adaptation, a free adaptation, of Jean de La Fontaine, La Cigale et la Fourmi. So sometimes we take from a book, from Maupassant, from different kind of authors, also a story that we put into a song.
I think of French music, and I think of there's obviously popular French music, and I think back to French jazz, and I think of Django Reinhardt or Josephine Baker, maybe
she's an American, but she sang in Paris.
This idea of the female vocalist and the jangly guitar. I mean, there is something that as far as you guys have gone to expand and create something new, it is still entrenched in the traditional. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is that intentional?
Well, I think every culture, which is healthy, it takes from other cultures and transforms it. And so this is the beauty of in the United States, in New York, in Los Angeles, in Chicago also. It's these are real factories of taking material from everywhere and mixing them up and mm-hmm. making something new with it. And this is... actually what we're trying to do.
Well, you two, of course, siblings, what is it like to work on this project together? I mean, you have worked together before, and you've been musical, Francis, your entire life. I mean, let me start with you. The idea of being able to produce this music with your sister and have her be the lead vocals on this project, what does that mean to you?
Not that easy.
let me say something. Erin is very much of a very interesting safeguard. As a musician, I worked lots with other musicians, a lot with male musicians, and there's an easy tendency to get a little bit macho with the music, to get into technical stuff, to do like technical music, wow, wow, that's smoking, that's heavy. And Irene always goes back on the rail and say, hey, what do you mean? What is this telling? What is this story saying?
It's about the story, right?
Exactly, right. Exactly. Is this about the story
or
about just playing
music? The drum is too heavy for the song. Exactly, it's a woman that's talking about love.
Is that, I mean, but for you, I mean, talk about the same thing, the idea of being paired up with your brother and the music that he's creating and the hybrid music that he has created. What does that do for your voice?
Oh, well, at the beginning, it was completely unconscious for me to say, oh, let's make this song, you know, do these songs together. You know, who was I? Meaning I thought, oh, you know how to act. You'll be able, you know, to pull up. And of course, it's not the same. So I had also to practice and extend also my singing, even for this modest project as a singer. But it's really like, for me, getting sincere is something that Francis said, being genuine with something. And I hope that on stage there is something where the audience travels, of course, in different cultures with our musicians too, and also with different continents. My brother lives in America. He lives in New York. I live in Paris. So, of course, usually you don't see each other so much. But we have the same initial culture, but now we all have completely different lives, completely different people we are meeting. And so trying to bring these songs together is a genuine kind of travel, a kind of an adventure.
You might note the diversity of musicians in the cities that you've been listening today. We have musicians from Suriname, from Brazil, from Japan, from Nigeria, from Senegal, from Russia. I don't have them all on the top of my head, but the list is very long.
Well, they always say that music is, you know, is a uniform or a universal language. I mean, is that the case when you bring together people from all over the world to, I mean, is music a shorthand, if you will?
People say, oh, music is a universal language. And I don't know if I completely agree with that. Because try to listen to Chinese opera. I mean, it's difficult. At first, it's as difficult to understand as to understand Chinese. But it's... Some music are difficult, just difficult to... It takes a while. Some people say, I don't know anything about jazz. I don't like jazz. I don't understand. Some people say, well, it takes time. It's some acquired taste. Some, as for wines, as for everything, to understand the culture, to understand as the deeper it is, the more time it takes to understand.
Irene, you've got a tremendous career as an actress. The Showtime hit series, The Affair, other stuff. I mean, you've done so much in your career. Do you see a transition? Do you see, and this is just a modest project, as you said, but are you sort of getting the music bug and will you stay with it?
Oh, well, this is really, I'm performing the music within this project, which is our personal project. And I think it's great for actors to have different kind of projects. And for me, this is where I sing in this story with these songs we were writing together. Sometimes it did happen that I have to sing a song in a play or something like that. But this is...
Well, it's a great part.
Yes, I love this part. It's very nice. Wonderful.
And Francis Jacob, in studio, they perform here live. They were just in town at Alliance Francaise. Really appreciate you guys being here. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's time for swap meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware, as long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman
and Greg Flam. It's like the old cartoons. You pop in. And Greg Flam.
Pop out of the side, right?
It's time for Swap Meet here on the Download 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. You can text, you can call. You can tell us about all the memorabilia, the collectibles, the great stuff that you've had in the basement for a while now. Just the junk that you want to brag about. Whatever you like. Greg is here to help out, evaluate, and tell you if it's worth anything. 312-981-7200. You can find Greg at DuPage Picker on Twitter and Facebook. Greg, good to see you.
Hey, Justin. Good to see you guys.
How you been?
Good.
How's it picking?
Pretty good. Yeah, strong weekend last weekend, right?
Because it was nice out? Why? What's big about it?
Yeah, I can never put my finger on it. It just was busy last weekend. This weekend, there's some, but doesn't look as strong as last weekend. But, you know, you take what the defense gives you.
This is those weekends that
that's
you
right.
dream about. You guys are tossing and turning. The picker community is just like, ah. Oh. And then you look like, just so much.
I got to work on a John Fox impersonation.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Rose got a good one.
Yep.
All right, 312-981-7200. Greg, what do you got? What'd you find this weekend?
Okay, just a couple things. I got one of the last, well, the last year of the Honey Bears, a poster of theirs. And it's,
yes.
You know, it's got the fake yes. signatures, but one of them did sign it in live ink. And I have to say, you know, we'll laugh at this, and I do laugh at it. But Honey Bear stuff is so collectible. I mean, that poster is probably $50 to
$100. That's an awesome poster.
Yeah, and it's even
How
missing
much
a little.
How much did you say?
About $50 to $100 for a poster. Yeah, I mean.
I love the fact that, I don't know, maybe one of the signatures was missed, and she's like, I'm filling it in.
Right. She had it filled in, and she signed it live, too. But no, yeah, it's just so collectible, and there's hardly anything online because people are buying it up, and they stopped being a cheerleading unit.
Yeah, one of my that was 86 after the Super Bowl. One of my cousins, from the Weiner clan, Candy,
okay,
was a what do you call it? A honey bear.
Honey bear, yeah,
yeah. But yep. I don't see her on this poster, so I don't know. It was more of a lore story. I'll be honest with you, like a legendary story from the family.
Maybe
you
it was
know
a
your
year
cousin?
Before or something. Yeah.
Do you know your cousin was a honey bear? What is it, a honey bear?
Yep. And the other thing was just a portable reel-to-reel from like the late
Before
60s.
Before we get to the reel-to-reel, yep. what do you got on the
company? Is that Cheryl hunter? Burton?
There is. I was going to ask you that
yeah,
because
like
you said there's a woman in the middle who had Cheryl, a black woman. That looks like Cheryl. Yeah.
Yeah, ABC anchor.
That makes
another
$25 more.
Yep, I'm raising it.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, so now that's
if you want to
cool.
see Cheryl Burton at a young age as a honey bear,
there you
in
go.
A poster from 1986.
Yeah, we'll post a pic afterwards.
All right, and let's talk about the.
Yes,
what else you
and then I have a portable reel to reel from the late 60s, and this is the second one of this portable style small reel to reel I've purchased. The first one I purchased had a great story. A Vietnam vet, while he was serving in Vietnam, sent back tapes to his girlfriend using this tape player.
Oh, wow.
And so, obviously, this was probably 2 years ago, he saw the same model listed and just thanked me up and down for posting that same model.
Because then he could play them and play them back.
And you could play them on any reel-to-reel, but he just really liked the sentimental value of having the exact same one that he recorded.
These are old school. Where'd you find that one?
Estate sale. You can get it for anywhere from $5 to $20. Yeah. And they run on batteries, you know, and it still worked. I mean, obviously, the first thing that goes on these is usually the rubber belt.
Right. So. Anything Honey Bear related about this item?
No, not that I know of.
Okay. Well,
tapes, you know, you never know.
Going with a theme, a Honey Bear theme here
I
on
tried.
The download tonight, the swap meet.
Yep, I tried.
All right, 312-981-7200. I got to reach out. I got to find Candy and see if she's got some Honey Bear memorabilia. I didn't know it was so hot.
It is. It's hardly anything on eBay.
Like, what are they selling? Just pictures and
well, there's
pom-poms
some
8x10s like
on there of a couple of the Honey Bears, but as far as posters or any kind of promotional items, that would get you to decent money.
I mean, Cheryl's probably off the air at 10:30, right? The ABC News. We get her over here, and she could tell us in the second half about
that'd be awesome.
You know what kind of memorabilia she has from the Cubby Bear or from the I keep calling the Cubby Bear,
Cubby Bear,
Honey Bears.
Yep.
I call her Huggy and Cubby already.
There you go.
Keep messing up the Honey Bears. All right, 312-981-7200. I got one from 847 for you.
Okay.
Vintage Braniff, BRANIFF, International Airways, playing cards featuring a stewardess serving tea, blue uniform with silver teaser, open box, cards are perfect. Braniff International Airways playing cards.
Yeah, the airline stuff is pretty collectible. I'm not sure on Braniff. I'm going to say off
is
the bat.
Is that an old airline?
Yeah, old airline. And, you know, you find those quite often at estate sales, Eastern Airlines, United, TWA, Pan Am, all that. I pick them up when I can if they're less than a dollar or something. But you're looking at probably 10 to 15. I'm looking up right now. And yeah, this is what I'm kind of getting. Actually, anywhere from 5 to 15.
Are there certain airlines that people are, like, gaga for, like a Pan Am? Or
usually, yeah, the ones that are defunct, Pan Am, Eastern.
TWA, if you will.
Right, anything that's no longer in the skies.
Yeah. Like the little wings they would give you?
Right, the little junior wings, yeah.
I got a pair of wings once when I think about this now, and I'm like, it just blows my mind. But my parents put me on a plane to California to see my grandparents. They lived in San Diego, L.A. And I just went. I just got on the plane and like at 7 years old.
You were cool with that?
Yeah. Like, so they gave me a little like the
The wings.
The wings.
Nice.
Which I promptly lost.
Yeah.
So I they could be worth at least $2.50 at this point. $2
and no, probably 10 or 12 bucks.
All right. All right, let's go to line 312-981-7200. Let's go to Joe. Joe, what do you want to brag about, Joe?
Hey, listen, I found a treasure trove last time I was rooting around in the attic.
All right.
I love
it. I don't know whether I saved them or the wife saved them, you know, so I wouldn't lose it all.
Okay.
But we got a bunch of $5 Desert Inn coupon, or chips,
chips,
if you will.
Oh, yeah, chips. Yeah, that's awesome.
Really?
And I assume Desert Inn's been raised quite some time
ago. Oh, yeah, yeah. And the same thing, the casinos there are no longer. If you have chips from them, they can be quite expensive.
So you've got the chips from the Desert Inn, you're predating me, and I'm assuming Desert Inn's a Vegas hotel that was real hot Frank Sinatra-type place?
You got it. And they're in superb condition.
How many do you have?
I mean, quite a few.
Let's do this. Let's go back to Vegas. Let's go to one of the new places, like the Cosmopolitan, walk up to the cage and be like, cashing out? And right. See what they do with them.
It looks like they're...
Nobody's in on that idea?
That sounds like a possible ploy, no doubt.
All right.
We could, try it. And you tell them, hey, listen, we want what it's worth. We want the $5, but we also want some interest because we got these back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Amen.
Okay, so the red that just has a red background with a $5 symbol.
It's red perimeter with two white slices three right. times. And then three looks like crowns or something like that, diamond figures.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah.
All right.
Hardcore. That's some serious casino right there. Some diamonds on it.
Yeah, I can't find that one offhand, but they're all over the place. They're anywhere from 10 to I've seen some for 250. Wow. There's one here $800
wow. for a chip for a $5
chip. $5 chip, yeah.
That is Holy. Vegas.
So that's what I'm saying. You definitely got something there. I would check it out, or if you want to text us a picture of it, I can look it up during a commercial break for you.
Yeah, there you go.
Would you guys go on the Google principally or what?
Just any online site, eBay, Amazon, gotcha. Anywhere, but eBay probably is going to have that.
eBay is going to tell you what at least where it's at. You can look it up on eBay.
Yep.
Gotcha. We'll follow through with you, folks.
Sounds All right, thank good. You. Thanks, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
There you go.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, right? Let's keep going. 312-981-7200. Let's go to John. John, what do you want to brag about, John?
Yes, sir. I was adopted later in life. My father was 45 when he adopted me.
Okay.
I was going through some old stuff, you know, and I found my dad's uniforms from World War I.
Oh, wow.
And ration books to the metal plate pictures, you know, from 1901.
Right.
Damn.
You know, and a lot of postcards because my dad was in the Merchant Marines also.
Okay.
And they traveled all over the place.
So you collect
and
the
they have, and they used to have places where you would go and you would get you'd go out drinking with the guys or whatnot, and you would get your picture taken with all of them, and you know, and they put it in a little booklet, and it's just some weird stuff.
Yeah, no, that's some priceless stuff there.
I would never get rid of it, but I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, going, you
know, I would think the World War I uniform.
Yeah.
I mean, that's some hardcore stuff, right?
Yeah, any World War I, World War II, Civil War, all that stuff is so highly sought after.
Wow.
And the nice part is my dad always took care of everything, and it was put in a position where it wouldn't rot or moths
right.
would get to it.
Yeah, it's hard enough to find World War II stuff now, let alone World War I. So,
you could go, and you know where you could make money if you ever were going to sell that? It's like sell it to Hollywood. You know, you can sell it to like a production company, costume shop or something. They'd probably be like, yeah, that's great. We'll
It's pretty funny. You look at the three-quarter pants and they're kind of shit.
Wow. Right. Wow.
Yeah.
That's my winner tonight. I love that.
If you do sell it, go to an auction house. You will definitely get some good money for that.
Don't sell it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no. I would.
But I would wear it all the time.
I enjoy looking at it.
Don't sell it. Make it your pajamas. That's what I would do. All right, thanks, John.
You're a little too heavy.
A little too heavy, right?
Well, thanks, John.
It's good for the winter.
Thanks, guys.
All right, 312-981-7200. I love it. That's a good one, man.
Yeah, starting
how often do you see that where you get you know, actual uniforms, like World War One.
I hardly ever see. I see,
like, with the pointy hat and stuff. Is that a German thing with the pointy the helmet?
Yeah, I guess that would be.
The bayonet. He's got bayonet, maybe.
Yeah,
I'm thinking All Quiet on the Western Front.
You know, it's not my expertise because I can never afford that stuff. I walk in,
really?
And if I do see World War II, it's like I already know. It's just,
this is World War One, man.
I know, and that's what I'm saying. It's like
World War II. That's nothing. World War One. Wow.
Wow.
Dang, man. I like that a lot. All right, we're getting some good stuff coming in here. All right, let me throw these on. You ready?
Yep.
847 says, I don't know if this is real or not. I have a $2 bill signed by Ernie Banks.
Nice.
I've got this $2 bill. What should I do? I don't know. I'll have a baseball player sign it.
$5 probably. I don't know.
Really?
30
I mean,
maybe.
But what would that even be? But I mean,
again, he should have, even a blank sheet of paper with his signature would probably be worth more than a $2 bill signed for him. You know,
it's $2.20.
Like, yeah, I don't know.
That's amazing. I love it. 312 says, you can see Braniff, the airline, at the end of every South Park episode. Yeah.
There you go. Well,
let's get to some of these calls. I got some good text as well, but let's get to some of these. Let's go to Paula. Paula, what do you want to brag about, Paula?
Well, I have a couple things. One is a tricolored light Olympia beer hanging sign, like neon sign.
It's like a lamp, like the lamp sign, right?
Love it. I'd be all over that.
Like the thing that you would see in a
bar sign.
Yeah, like you'd see in a
bar,
right?
I took it in the window.
Right. Okay.
And the other thing I have, we have 24 Playboy swizzle sticks for drinks.
Oh, we had this the other week.
They're plastic.
Yeah, I actually brought some in a week or two ago. I'd say about, let's see, I think I had about 10, and they go for about $25 to $30 for the swizzle sticks.
Like for a group of 10 or just one?
Yeah, a group of 10. I mean, not many people sell them by themselves. The like orange, you know, like the clear plastic, if it's orange or like a red, those are worth a few dollars more than the black or the white ones.
Ours are all black.
Yeah, if they're all black, like I said, 10 go for about $25, $30. The bear sign, though, is your winner, and
it's only a winner if it's got that sort of brown, burnt-out bulb around it. Is it burnt out at all? That's my favorite when you see
it. Oh, no, it's not burnt out. No. It still lights up very brightly.
I like the burnt-out ones.
So is it backlit, or does it actually have, like, neon around it?
It's probably from the 50s or 60s.
Okay.
But so it is neon, like, through tubing.
Okay, okay.
That's
good.
Some Freon stuff there. That's some bad news. Don't break that bulb.
Yeah, you're probably in the $300 to $700 range, I want to say.
Holy cow.
Yeah, if you want to text a picture, too, I could probably, you know, get a better price for you on that.
There you go. All right, thanks, Paula.
That would be awesome. Thank you so
thanks
much.
For calling.
Have a great night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, 312-981-7200. We got some great stuff here, but I'm going to take a break because we didn't take a break at the half, so I want to take a break and get us caught up here. Dwayne, John, we got to get to John. John, that's a good one. Steve as well on the line. We've got so many texts. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll get an update from Rob on the news, and then we'll get to everybody before the end of Swap Meet tonight here on 720 WGN. Stay with us.
It's time for Swap Meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman
and Greg Flam. It's a Swap Meet here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. This is our great segment we do once a week where we brag about all the collected junk, memorabilia, and fun stuff that we've accumulated over the years. And Greg evaluates. He'll tell you if it's worth anything or if it's cool or if it's just another drop in the bucket. It's just something everybody's got.
Yep.
Like early on, we found out everyone's got one of those towels or posters from when the Pope came.
The Pope came, yep. Yep. And
you think you got one of those towels that when the Pope came and you think you're special? You're not special.
That's right.
All right, let's get to this. They got a lot of people on the line. They stayed through the news. I appreciate that. Let's go to Dwayne. Dwayne, what do you want to brag about, Dwayne?
I have postcards signed by Moonlight Doc Graham.
Moonlight Doc Graham.
Of all the things I couldn't find.
What is that? What is Moonlight Graham? Is that an artist?
Did you ever see the movie where they, if you build it, he will come?
The Field of Dreams? Yeah. That's usually
Doc
called
Graham
Field
of Dreams. A real person.
Oh,
he was a doctor in a small town in Minnesota. Okay. And I remember my family lived there, and he sent postcards whenever he would travel.
Oh, cool.
That one you stumped me with.
I like that. But it That's is cool you got that, right. though. Yeah.
It is cool.
How did you? Did your family know him?
Yeah. It was a family physician.
Wow. Okay.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, that's pretty rare.
Well, it's rare. I mean, it's not showing up on any of the things, so I would there might be some Moonlight Graham friends here.
It doesn't exist. Yeah, it's not there. Okay. I was just curious if he had any idea.
No, nothing. Sorry.
But it's cool.
It is.
Yeah. All right, thanks. Okay. Thanks,
well,
Dwayne.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks,
all right, thank you.
All right, let's go to John. I like this one. John, what do you want to brag about?
Well, I've got a couple of, I think it's Weber and wire recorders, which are like the precursor to reel-to-reel tape recorder.
Sure, right.
Wow.
Is what condition is yours in? What would you say?
Well, one of them is functional. Last time I tried to run it, it does. And the other one, I got it a swap meet or something.
Sure.
So,
right. And the third one's in the Trump Tower.
There you go. The one that's working, you're probably in the $200 to $300 range. The one that might need work, you could dump it for $70, $80.
So what? How does it work? What's a wire recorder? Is it wires?
Well,
it's not tape?
Reel-to-reel wire tape recorder work?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This has got a spool, but there's a thin wire on it, and you run it through and around the take-up reel, and it works the same way as a...
Yeah, right. It's just wires instead of tape, right?
Yeah, they look really cool, though. That's the thing. They look better than most reel-to-reel.
I love it, man.
Just as a display piece.
Love it! John, I love that one. It's my favorite of the night. Although, no, I already said that. There was one earlier that it was my favorite of the night.
The next one will be.
John, thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's keep going. Let's go to Steve. Steve, what do you want to brag about, Steve?
I was at a flea market in Rosemont, and I ran across a poster that's 14 by 21. It's like on a hard backing.
Right, cardstock.
And it says the president and Jackie Kennedy. It says Dallas welcomes the president and Jackie Kennedy. It's like a blue.
No.
Right. No, I found that. Yeah, that's a good one. But they're about $15 to $40, to be honest.
So it's like the poster welcoming the president to the... Like a day
that's
before he gets shot?
It's the exact photo of them coming down, and she's holding the roses, and it's got a number on it. That has to be after the fact, right? Because it couldn't have been printed.
Yeah, well, how would they print, like, a picture of them in the car or walking down?
Yeah. What is it worth?
Most of the Jackie and JFK posters, I can't tell you, because yours is Dallas-specific, but most of that size on the cardstock poster are between 15 and 40. I am still trying to find maybe the exact one, like for Dallas. But if you message me through Facebook or something, I can do a little more research.
Yeah, look
for
it up.
Do
so that would be worth more money then, right?
It could be, yeah, if it's Dallas specific and when it was printed.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all right, it's got a number on it, 196.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thanks for calling.
Thank you, bye.
Bye.
There you go, 196. All right, let's get into some, I think we've inspired some talk of...
wire recorders?
No, World Wars.
Oh, okay.
Got a lot of army sort of memorabilia coming through right now. Let's go to James. James, what do you got, James? What do you want to brag about?
I have an old medicine bottle that was from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all engraved with Japanese words and everything. And there's a letter inside, a little note that said that it was actually the doctor worked on President Teddy Roosevelt.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bottle itself isn't that much, anywhere from 10 to 100. But
so wait, it's a medicine bottle from Japan?
Yeah, it's a...
But they worked on President Teddy Roosevelt?
I guess.
Isn't that a couple years before Japan? I feel like like this is one of those weird kind of puzzle-like word games.
Right.
Well, be honest with you, I have been looking it up on eBay and everything of some of the old medicine bottles from Japan.
Right.
And there's variations of them and everything. But some of them I did find said that most of the doctors over in Japan that came to the United States were only allowed certain medicine bottles.
Right.
And this is one of them.
Oh,
okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Again,
the bottle itself could be 10 to 100. The letter inside could change that. You definitely have to have that checked out.
All right. All right, check it out. Thanks, James.
Thanks for calling.
That's a good one. Let's go to Elizabeth. Elizabeth, what do you want to brag about? What do you got?
I have a card in front of me from the Japanese Imperial Army.
Whoa.
Wow.
My brother fell at Bataan, was in the Bataan Death March, survived it, and was imprisoned in Philippine military prison camp number 2.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
It's a card from the Imperial Japanese Army, and it's marked censored, and they have printed words there, I am interned at, and then it says it was...
Wow.
It was Billibud.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, he was a yeoman.
You should give that. You know, I mean, it's one thing to be able to say yes. I don't know what that is even worth, but I would say you should contact like the history museum or something, because that's the kind of stuff that you could see in the Smithsonian or possibly in the museums in Chicago, because they would take an interest in. That's just such a moving part of our history.
Yeah, there's no way to put a price on that.
Yes, we have also a letter when he was freed from the office of the governor at that time, Dwight Green, telling us that he was glad that we are overjoyed at the prospect of seeing my brother again. I have telegrams.
Where's your brother from? Was he from this area?
He was born in Czechoslovakia. I have his passport yet, and he came to the United States at the age of 14. He joined the Navy to see the world. He was on the USS New York.
Wow.
I even have his picture from Great Lakes Training Camp from 1931.
Yeah, you got a great story there, and like Justin said, you should take that to one of those societies that would
absolutely
really appreciate.
This is kind of stuff I would want to see and I'd want to learn about.
It's all brown and fragile, and except for the papers from the Navy Department, of course, that was good paper.
Well, Elizabeth, thanks for sharing your brother's story. That's
that's
but
really
you got my ire up when you said World War II. Oh,
yep. you did it! I said that you're right. You're right. You're absolutely
came down to the kitchen to call you on my landline.
That's awesome,
Elizabeth. Thanks for calling. As a matter of fact, I just stopped short of going, this is the best one of the night, because I felt like I've been overdoing it. But this one,
that was a
this
great
one
story.
Right here is the best, Elizabeth. Thank you.
Thank
wow.
you.
There you go. Whew.
Wow.
That's a great tonight's great. There's we've got a World War I uniform.
Yep.
Letters and of internment from the Bataan Death March, Japanese internment camps.
Yeah, that is something we'll probably never hear about again. As far as another person, with an item.
630 says he has a pair of Fruit of the Loom Tidy Whitey signed by Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh man, how do you go from?
This is the best swap meet ever.
All right,
let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up the swap meet tonight. We got a lot of texts to get through, as well as people on the line. 312-981-7200. Swap meet, Greg Flamm. Stay with us. All right, Greg Flamm back here. 312-981-7200. It's the download. Patty Vasquez coming up here at 11 o'clock. All right, we got a lot to get through. So let's go ahead and go to the texts. We'll go rapid fire through some of this stuff.
Okay.
217 says, I have 15,000 Star Wars CCG playing cards. What is that?
They were like trading cards, that's a pretty large collection. What I was finding is for about 1,500 cards. About
maybe that's what they mean.
$300 for 15, lost my train of thought. about 1,500 cards goes for about $300. So, multiply 3, 000, that out, I guess. Yeah.
I did the math in my head right there.
Brain cramp.
I was told there'd be no math.
Yeah.
630, I have a 12-inch tall toy of the Japanese monster Gamera, signed by two actors from the film Gamera vs. Virus. Virus.
Yeah, there's quite a few of those online. They're about $20 to $30, depending on condition.
Oh, really?
So
I was thinking that'd be like, that was the jackpot.
Yeah, I was hoping to.
312 says, I have a copy of Dear Dead Days. Is that worth it? What is that? What is that? Dear Dead Days. Is that a book?
A book, yeah. And it's
you're not really big on the books.
I'm not, but I did find it. I was able to.
What
$40 to $65.
Wow. Yeah. What is Dear Dead Days? What is it?
You're asking the wrong person.
That's probably something that they're all snickering, like, can't believe you're talking about Dear Dead Days.
Nope.
630 says, I have a Nazi dagger from World War II. My grandpa took from a dead Nazi soldier, found him dead, and a crosswords didn't kill him.
Okay.
Just to let you know that.
The backstory, I don't know what that's worth, but the dagger is 100 to 200.
Wow.
Depending on condition as well. And they're pretty rare. I was only able to find one.
Wow. This is one of my favorites. I swear, these are great tonight. Yep. This is so good. 630. I have several poker chips from the Rock Garden Club, one of Al Capone's illegal gambling and speakeasy bars. Come on.
Yeah, I'm trying to find
That's great. That's what I'm talking about. That's the heart and soul of the swap meet right there.
There it is. That's what we want.
Nailed it. Nailed it, 630. Thank you.
Yep.
And you can't find it anywhere?
I can't find it.
That's because Al Capone doesn't make it easy for you.
That's right.
Al Capone's not your eBay gangster.
Right. He doesn't want his stuff.
He's all that information's hidden in some secret chamber somewhere.
Yep.
Diet Right Cola clock. Yeah. They sent a picture of it. A diet sugar-free Diet Right Cola clock. It looks like it's old. The light works. The clock works.
Yeah. If it's in great condition, they're about $250,
$300.
What? Yeah. And,
you got to be kidding me.
I would be all over that if I could afford that.
Why? What was it like? I just love that diet, right?
Anything mid-century modern. I love just that era. I tend to buy anything. And
so that's nothing to do with Diet Right?
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows Diet Right was a soda, but it's more the design of it. It just screams, you know, 1960s, 1950s, you know, 70s even.
219 says he's got a Commodore 64 keyboard and monitor and disk drive, working condition.
That's awesome. I have the same.
Look at you.
I don't have the monitor, though, so I already know what that's worth. It's about, with the monitor all working, probably $300, $250, $300. There's actually a Commodore 64 Facebook group.
You could trade it in for like a working working gateway for $300.
Right, with the DVD burner.
More World War II stuff tonight. 360's got a World War II Japanese rifle with the original bayonet.
Yeah, that I couldn't find yet.
All markings still on it. Wow, that's eerie.
Yeah.
I get freaked out by the enemy soldier stuff. Because I'm always like, it's like a...
What always strikes me is that can't happen these days. Like, you know, people aren't, you know, soldiers really can't bring back stuff because they probably get inspected it's probably a lot more monitored.
That's why you don't see stuff from, you know, I was fighting ISIS and look what I got.
Right. You know, I think that's what makes it even more special.
Oh, interesting. 847 says, unearthing grandpa's debris and came across a zinc full-size statue of the goddess Liberty, 1940s.
Wow.
Contacted by Christie's in New York, auctioned off in January by auction for $38,000. Thanks, Grandpa. Wow.
That was a nice present.
Nice work. There. Nice work. $38,000.
Wow.
Could you imagine being up in the attic and being like, what's this? Is this zinc?
Yep.
It's a statue? Let's break it.
I heard an awful story the other night. You know, someone was passing away. They said the notes in such and such, like, drawer. And then when the person passed, you know, they left a note and basically said, there's no money in the note. Just like, that's
harsh.
Love. Nothing
that's
says
harsh.
Love like that.
All right. Let's get through some of these new ones. We'll see what we can get through. Stratomatic baseball game from the 70s. Let's try that one out.
We had that one before, yeah.
847 says, let's move on from that one. 847 says, we had authentic World War I helmets. Authentic swords, bayonets, and much more debris. Two-way radios carried in war over soldiers' shoulders, like the ones carried in MASH.
Yeah, the heavy
It's all authentic. We think Pops was hoarding it before it was popular. We'd like to think he was just a great collector, but...
Yeah, no, that's... you definitely got some great stuff there.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah, I can't even begin to tell you what that's... Like I said, it's just something that's way out of my realm.
All right, let's see what we got. There's a lot of stuff coming in here. Oh, I see. 312 says, Dear Dead Days is a collection of photos and newspaper articles published by Charles Adams of the Adams Family fame.
Okay.
I have a brick from Old Comiskey Park in a display case.
Nice.
That went distributed to local politicians only. Okay. Oh, in the local politician clout.
There you go.
Someone knows a streets and sand commissioner. Be able to get one of those.
I'm trying to find
maybe a committeeman. We'll take it. I like that.
Yeah, about they're $20 to $100.
So 847 says, I have a sword worn by a member of the Colombian Guard in the 1893 World's Fair. Okay. I have a sword worn by a member of the Colombian Guard. It just says it over and over and over. Hmm. It was my great-grandfather's.
Wow. Yeah, I'm trying to look that up.
Now, I get confused on which World's Fair it was, because I think it was more like the whatever the one was later. Melissa Thodos was telling me, and we didn't get a chance to get into it, that the Auditorium Theater was built, whenever the Auditorium Theater was built, maybe 100 years or so ago.
Okay.
It was built 2 years before the World's Fair came to Chicago. And it was the reason why they chose Chicago, because they had the big theater. If they didn't, they would have probably passed Chicago. And I don't think it's the one. Is it the 1893? There more than one World Fair? Yeah, there's two.
There
right?
was. Yeah, I was
1893
watching,
in like 1930s or 20s or.
I want to say sorry, 1893 or whatever that one sounds right.
Yeah.
Was that the one where basically we were like the beginners of the electricity? That was the big reason they picked Chicago. They wanted to make an example for electricity
probably,
moving forward.
I feel like there were a couple, 1903. I have to figure that out. Someone will tell us.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many, and we're not going to get to them. We only have a minute left, and I feel like there are a million. There's not a million. There's like 20. Yep. But there's 20 texts that just came in. I'll just read them real quick. And we can do this more next week, next when Greg's back. But I've got a World War II Japanese occupation money in various denominations.
Mm.
That's interesting.
Yep.
Yes, they said the second one was a Columbian exposition in 1933. Okay. I was right. So I said 30s,
right?
Yep. I think that's the one. Zenith Radio Works turntable doesn't yet. It's a picture of like a cool, like, armoire.
Okay.
630 says, I have a story behind the poker chips, the Al Capone poker chips. Maybe next week and call in and tell it. Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
Hello.
Sure.
Life magazine from 1945, perfect condition, concentration camp pictures inside that are very hard to look at. Yikes.
Wow.
We really hit a nerve on World War II.
We did.
Yeah. Let's see what else. I don't know much about baseball. A Cubs souvenir with a picture of an original Wrigley Field and the picture sewn into the ball.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, let's do these calls real quick. Mary Ellen. Mary Ellen, quickly.
Oh, hi there.
Hi, what do you want to brag about?
Okay, I've got a 45. It's on the VJ label, and I think that's in Chicago, and it's the Beatles, Do You Want to Know a Secret? And the flip side is Thank You, Girl. And then I've also got one that's under the label of Swan, which I never heard of. It looks like it might have been out of Philadelphia. She Loves You, and the back side, it says, I'll Get You.
Wow.
I love it. She Loves You is the first one, and some the B-side is I'll Get You.
Some of those VJ ones are really the winners. They're like $200 to $700.
Really?
I'm trying to find your exact one that you had.
Do you want to know a secret?
Okay, yeah.
Yes. I love secrets on call-in radio.
I can't love this find that one, but if, longer.
Yeah, but if you write through Facebook.
What's the secret?
What was it?
What's the secret?
That was the song. Yeah.
No, it's a record. Yeah. The record. Do you want to know a secret?
Yeah.
And, I thought you were going to give us a secret.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Not mine.
All right.
We're out of time, but if you write through Facebook, I'll get your prices on the other one.
Thanks, Mary Ellen.
Okay, thanks very
Thank
much.
You.
All right. Bye-bye.
Can we get one more in? Let's get one more in. Jim, you got the last. We got just a quick second. What do you want to brag about?
Man, I've got a kimono from Tokyo Rose, the radio lady in World War II.
Yeah, that's a good one. Kimono?
It was given to my mom. She had a shop here in Chicago up on Clark Street.
Wow.
You look it up online, you can check it out. I couldn't believe it, but I've got it.
That's awesome.
And that is awesome.
All right, Jim. Thanks, man. Thanks.
All right, man. Good show.
Thank you.
That's a great way to end it, man. Come on. What a show.
The World War.
That was a great combination of great things that have value and also awesome things to brag about.
Yep, nice
Greg Flamm, DuPage Picker on Facebook and Twitter. He joins us weekly here to do Swap Meet. We'll do it again, I think, next Wednesday, right? We got a show next Wednesday? I think we do.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Justin.